say to turn on your radio.
Something fresh and exciting. Somebody with a sock personality that'll sweep people right off their feet.
Where is he? What is he up to? What other terrors can he unleash at will?
Starring your genial host, renowned writer, art collector, and teller of strange tales.
What fiendish power did he possess? Where did he come from? Who is this man?
Believe me.
It's the Shannon Burke Show on the Florida Man Radio Network for a Monday, unfortunately. Talk radio the way our founders intended. America, it turns out, the telling a violent regime known for funding terrorism around the world, don't, may not be the best foreign policy. Day 1186.
Jeez, that was loud.
People of the Eric in America, say hello to EZ.
What's up?
Good afternoon to you, putting the heat in Heather.
Hello.
Double H is here. We'll hear from her next hour, and Heather has answers. Dark history at the top of the third hour, and our buddy Eric Matheny, I'm sure, have a lot to go over in the last week, certainly. Well, it was no World War III, not yet. It was, that whole thing was, I'm listening to Between the Ribs, Jonathan's live thing from the Panhandle, and I've got it on, but I'm watching, got the news on, and I'm doing other stuff. I'm booking bearing around the house, and I look up, I'm like, uh-oh. Iran, let everybody know, or let Turkey know, Turkey, let Israel know, or whatever, you know. We told them, and they announce it. Not often you get, you know, hey, war's headed your way. The word started getting out, dozens, this, that. Here's the total numbers at the end of the day. 331 missiles and drones all shot down. 103 out of 110 ballistics shot down. 36 of 36 cruise missiles shot down. 7 ballistic missiles hit an Israeli military area, causing some damage. A little girl got some shrapnel. And then, out of nowhere, they get another announcement. This concludes our attack today. Okay, we're done. That's it. And, you know, everyone instantly, I don't know about you, I instantly think, okay, I'm thinking ahead. How does this, what's the next step, the next step, the next step, and how do we eventually get, you know, drawn into this in some form or fashion? Then I remember the warnings that candidate Biden gave us.
The world has changed because what Trump has done. And the American people, including independents and some Republicans, know how bad he is, know how much he's misrepresented, know how he's getting close to getting us in a war. I said, as the walls close in on this man, I'm worried he's going to get us to war in Iran. Unfortunately, I may have been right. The fact of the matter is, there's a lot at stake.
Let's get to who is going to get us into war with Iran. When you look at this, one of the first things that crossed my mind Saturday afternoon was, okay, Biden has made $10 billion in previously frozen funds available for Iran, and people, you know, instantly go, okay, great, that's stupid. They're going to turn it into some type of weapons or fund an attack or further their nuclear ambitions. And then we've sent lots of military and lots of weaponry. And we've been instrumental in their defense, their missile defense system. So I stand back and go, holy crap, we're literally funding both sides of this, or we have to a certain extent. And you know, Obama released, I don't know how much money, pallets and pallets and pallets. Have we forgotten about the figure? We don't care anymore. Billions of dollars.
Yeah, I believe it was $10.
$10 billion in all types of currency, literally on pallets on giant aircraft that we just dropped off. You know, they were starving. Well, not starving. Their military was starving. And now they've got plenty of money. And now everyone around the world, please don't retaliate. do not retaliate at all. British Foreign Secretary David Cameron said that they should not. Macron says they should not. We must convince Israel that they must not respond and escalate it. Biden is the same way. But a lot of people think that he's kind of just kind of blindly walking into what could be a catastrophic war. He is. Here's what Israel says. Just because we were successful in intercepting, we shouldn't underestimate what they did. Okay. They launched 336 something or others or whatever. Either they knew that it was going to be intercepted, largely intercepted. Maybe they've got the Iron Dome, David's Sling. What's the other one? Arrow 2 and 3.
And also two U.S. ships and a U.K. ship sitting off the coast that were just basically doing that same thing.
Yeah, just picking them out of the sky. So I don't know what it was. Was it something through Iran? Because they knew that they would be largely unsuccessful here. It's almost an embarrassment to them, I would think. I would think that most people would see it as an embarrassment. You lost 300. A, you called them and let them know. B, you launched it, 300 of these things, knowing they have a pretty good missile defense system. And then you called them and said, okay, we're done. Just a weird.
It's almost one of those, like, honor things. Like, all right, you blew up one of our places. We have to throw some stuff at you. We're giving you a call ahead of time, letting you know.
But this is the first time in history that Iran has launched from Iran. I mean, not from some, you know, some proxy somewhere. But on Sunday, if you see the pictures out of Israel, people are at the beach. They're at the cafes. They're like, yeah, it's another day in, you know, in Israel. Literally, like, nothing happened at all. Which I think one is the greatest revenge, living well. That's kind of their life, though, right? They've lived that for a long time. 8:30 in the morning, cafes are open, beach was open. Everything was back to normal. We're used to it. It's kind of a normal thing for us. you know, a lot of people say, what would have happened had Biden not released this $10 billion? Well, they insist, well, there's been protections in place. It can only be, can't be immediately accessed for these types of things. It was meant to help build the electrical grid and blah, blah, blah. And we got, you know, they can't use it for that stuff. We told them, don't spend it on the war stuff. Don't buy big bombs and such.
That's the dumbest thing I've heard everybody keep saying. Oh, well, there were so many sanctions and protections on it. Yes. If I give you $25 and you... And I told you, you can only use this for groceries. Okay, but the other $25 that you normally have in your pocket that you can only use, that you have for earmarked for groceries, you can now go buy ammunition with it. Right. Because they're giving you your grocery money.
It's ridiculous to think that the money wasn't spent for that. It almost sounds as if it was a pseudo-deliberate act. And now, you know, honestly, Israel could call it a day here. And go, you know what, no harm, no foul, a little bit of damage here. Let's let them feel like they've got it out of their system and lay back, continue, finish up Gaza and call it a day. I don't think that's within their nature. And I think most people from most Israelis and people within the IDF are like, you know, a lot of them want to just say, leave us alone.
Which that's my more worrisome part to this whole thing. I almost, there's some feel to me that Iran did this knowing that they would provoke Israel to return fire again. And they'll say, well, you know, we called ahead. We told them we were going to do it, doing all this, da, 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 da. And then when Israel starts, you know, launching rockets that kill people because they are, you know, actually
in Iran.
You
think they would hit Iran directly?
I think they would. Then, of course, and then they would do the normal thing, cry foul and go, oh, my God, look, Israel's the aggressor. And right. We're done fighting.
It's like Hamas XL is exactly what it is. Yeah. We're just minding our own business. We got a little bit of retribution. And you know, for the world, it puts things on a more precarious place. And look at where we are right now. Pull way back from Middle East. Look here at home. The absolute catastrophe caused by this border policy, the immigration policy right now, which, by the way, is absolutely 100% deliberate and designed to do exactly what he Here. Here is in his own words.
An unrelenting stream of immigration. Nonstop. Folks like me who were Caucasian of European descent, for the first time in 2017, will be in an absolute minority in the United States of America. Absolute minority.
Is that, I don't understand it. Unrelenting stream of immigration. And look at everything else here. You had pro-Palestinian people clashing in the Bronx with cops. I mean, that was a riot. You have right now Chicago O'Hare Airport. Access to that airport has been blocked by pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel crusaders. Protesters have shut down the Golden Gate Bridge this morning in both directions. You've got a big protest in Lower Manhattan. I mean, it's like everyone is tense and angry, and we've just been whipped into a fury by what's going on in the Middle East. I don't remember. We've been dealing with Middle East strife since I'm a child, and I never recall this level of unrest at home about what's going on over there.
I think it's part of it. We made it hip to be, because a lot of the times you look at these protests, the O'Hare one, the one that's going on now on the Golden Gate
Bridge.
People
are getting out of their cars trying to run to the airport.
Yeah. And guess what it is, though? It's a bunch of liberal white kids.
Oh, I'm certain.
Almost every one of them.
Yeah.
It's become hip to be the protest, and that's how you're changing the world now, is going out there and doing this. And
I don't know how this is allowed, and it's been going on. The Golden Gate Bridge has been shut down for a long time. Cops have been on the scene for a very long time. I'm looking at groups of cops right now, probably 20 gathered in a cluster, just standing around talking. Nobody is moving to remove these people. Nobody. I don't understand it. This latch, like it's actually being allowed. No, and there were cops on the scene at the O'Hare Airport this morning when it started.
Yes.
And parked in cars, arms crossed.
You have the right to free speech. You do not have the right to disorderly conduct, and that is what they're doing.
I will be bringing in the paddy wagons and get the zip tie handcuffs, and let's get the show on the road and unblock traffic. And this is, you know, for far too long, we have treated this as it's the good old, you know, American protesting. I don't agree that is a good old American project. When you're, you know, putting in, delaying everyone's day, maybe putting people in danger for a number of reasons, of losing their job, of getting sick, of not getting to the hospital, whatever it is, you have blocked a major thoroughfare, and that's no longer peaceful. I mean, no one was beaten, but it's not peaceful to F up tens of thousands of people's day and air travel and travel in and out of the Bay Area. I don't know why we allow it. They don't in other countries. You know, I think you stand in the middle of a road at your own risk. If you deliberately stand in the middle of a highway or a roadway for the purpose of stopping traffic, that there's no obligation for that traffic to stop for you.
Yeah, I think.
I get it. If you're on a residential, on a residential street, and a little Timmy's ball runs out, that's, you know, you're going 20 miles an hour, 25 miles an hour. So obviously, but in this case, you know, you're going 50, 60. I don't know what the speed limit is on the Golden Gate Bridge, but you're moving on at a heavy clip. It's more dangerous for you to stop than it would be for them to risk them. You know, I hate it. Oh, the people of Seattle though can rest easy because they've announced to the people, the Seattle Police Department is closely monitoring the conflict between Israel and Iran, and we're working with local and federal agencies to ensure the safety of Seattle community members. As a precaution, we'll proactively increase patrols around infrastructures and sensitive areas. Seattle Police Department's community liaisons are working with community leaders as a prevention measure. Currently, there are no specific credible threats. We are committed to the safety of the Seattle community.
I'd like to think that the Seattle Police Department called the FBI or the CIA, and they were like, why the hell are you calling us right now?
Yeah, that is just insane. What are they? What, that this could be anything. It could mean that we're closely monitoring the conflict. They got like CNN on at the down at the headquarters. You know, oh yeah, we're on this. Don't worry about it. I mean, were they getting calls like, oh my God, what are you doing about the Israel Iran?
It's Seattle, so yes, probably. So.
Oh, I'm having a mental breakdown.
Yeah, we actually have Officer Tom. He's closely monitoring both CNN and MSNBC. We've also ordered him a pizza, so he's good through the night.
How long before the Biden White House KJP comes out and warns against Islamophobia?
I will say they will do it today.
You know,
I think if they do a White House presser today, she'll say, remember, we
don't worry about all the anti-Semitism going on and all the campuses that want to, you know, beat up Jewish students. You be careful. Cool down your Islamophobia, man, because that's not cool. Trump's hush money trial underway in Manhattan. And I started thinking about this today. It is really they changed statute of limitations laws in order to file it. That type of monkey business shouldn't be tested in the first place. If you specifically, you know, engineered a statute of limitations extension on certain crimes, and we found a guy to prosecute for it. That alone,
yeah. Well, unless you can show that, hey, we got like 400 guys we got to prosecute on this. We've just been letting too many people get away with this.
Right. So, and besides all that and the obvious fact that it's a witch hunt there, put the shoe on the other foot. Isn't it just about sex, right? Is that what they said about Bill Clinton? It's just the only thing he lied about was sex. It's just about a BJ. You guys are all worked up. He only lied about sex, but he did perjure himself, while under oath. The whole depends on what your definition of the word is my favorite line. But really, it's the same thing, right?
Yeah, and you took a misdemeanor crime and somehow did some magic to work around and then charged as a felony.
Well, if it came, I guess it's trying to say that he used campaign funds to do the hush money. Hush money itself is not illegal. There's nothing wrong with it. Two parties agreeing to something and they put it on a legal document. One makes a payment. One says, thanks a lot. Here's my signature. See you later. If it was out of campaign funds, they mean that could be a problem. And defense I've read is, the campaigns are being spent exclusively for expenses that benefit the campaign. What would benefit the campaign more than this porn star blabbing about banging the candidate? It may be unsavory to you, but if you want to go by the rules, that's exactly what we're doing here.
I mean, is it illegal to pay a hush money out of campaign funds?
I'm sure it's been done a bazillion times.
I mean, what's the, you can say, are you trying to say it's some sort of fraud out of it? Because all you're saying is, I paid her for services for the campaign.
Well, I mean,
the services were sex.
They both now denying, he's denied it forever. Yeah. Isn't she denied it now?
She waffles back and forth.
And the key witness is Cohen. That guy went to prison for lying. You can't trust what he has to say on the stand? Do I have time to play? This is Fetterman on Israel. He's on CNN.
From the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Senator, what is your reaction to Iran's attack on Israel, and how worried are you that this is the beginning of an open war between the two countries?
Well, a couple of things, actually. I think it really demonstrates how it's astonishing that we are not standing firmly with Israel, and there should never be any kinds of conditions on all of that. When a nation can launch hundreds of drones towards Israel, and I'm not going to be talking about conditions ever. And second, I think that also was Iran had to have some fireworks after Israel smoked that Iranian general. And I'm here for that.
That's pretty violent rhetoric out of a Democrat. Not to mention that Biden allowed Iran to sell oil, millions of barrels of oil to China, which is made that was a sanction that he looked the other way and they've enriched themselves with.
I believe the other one was allowing Iraq One of the two, Iran is now allowing electricity to flow into it, and they're getting paid for it.
Iraq. From Iran to Iraq.
Yes.
When we get back, SCOTUS is looking at a case that could upend hundreds of January 6th prosecutions and put a significant snag in Jack Smith's case. And you might not know this to you. It's just a greeting, a friendly greeting of good morning. Until you hear how it is rooted in slavery. It's the Shannon Burke Show. Don't you think that Saturday afternoon, you know, that Lindsey Graham was just booger bearing around the house, he turned on the TV and he saw what was going on and got all excited?
Oh, yeah, he probably almost passed out in excitement.
Then he got up Sunday, hoping that, you know, retaliation was going to happen. John McCain came to me in my fleet last night at the Goth. We were completely naked and fully aroused about the thought of going to war in Iran. I woke up. I'm so fed, I might have had a wet dream. He was absolutely thrilled to death.
Got himself a mojito.
Mother brought a pitcher of mojitos out to the pool. Well, I frolicked with some of my friends from the YMCA. There are some hawks out there that I guarantee you right now that Nikki Haley is, advising on where to strike in Iran. Let's hit this nuke from there and their oil facilities. And
she just joined a new, like, pack for some sort of
pack for worldwide violence.
Basically, it's like a foreign affair, industrial foreign affairs pact or something like that.
Really? I guess they're picking the jury in Trump's thing.
Yeah, but now they're doing weird things with that as well. So they were afraid that you know, normal when you do a juror, they do it in a back room. They bring the juror in. They have the prosecutor, they have the defense, and they go back and forth with the juror asking questions.
Now it's just like 42 questions.
Well, no, they said this would be too intimidating for them to do it in the back room. So they're bringing the juror into the courtroom in front of everybody, but leaving the other jurors in the back so that the Trump defense team can't intimidate him while they're asking questions.
He's not going to get a fair jury.
And all it does is add more to appeals again.
If just one holdout gets on board, you know,
yeah,
one guy goes in there, maybe he's not completely truthful about his politics through Vore Dyer. Maybe he leans the other way and then just says, no, I'm not going to prosecute.
Again, it leads to, makes it super easy on appeals. You have, again, a judge that should have recused himself.
Yep.
He knows he should have when he has family members that were part of the campaign for the sitting president, and to go against it would benefit them to go for this. And he should have recused himself and added another judge.
Yeah, that's a good for an appeal as well. No doubt about it. Alvin Bragg is a guy that likes to say nobody's above the law, right? He's a big nobody's above the law guy. That, everyone's got to say that when you're prosecuting the president of the United States under some flim-flam, phony baloney, trumped-up charges and by a bunch of Democrats and liberal judges and liberal prosecutors. So nobody's above the law. Nobody's above the law. I want you to hear this. But the cat he's talking about here, a strange dude, John Carlos Zarazuela, is in the news for punching a woman in the face. And then after they realized he punched a woman in the face, they went back and found, when they took him to prison, the jail, found out, oh, he just got out. He just got ran through here a week ago for punching a woman in the face.
Well, you can do the crime now in New York City, but you don't have to do the time. That, say critics, is the message from the new progressive Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin Bragg. Mr. Bragg has new policies that, to some, is a stunning reversal of the traditional law enforcement policies. Bragg stressing diversion and alternatives to jail time, like crisis intervention, over putting some criminals behind bars. He will no longer incarcerate lawbreakers unless it's murder, a crime that involves someone's death, or a felony. Bragg says his goal is...
Did you hear that?
Yeah, only murder.
Only murder. You can choke a bitch out and walk out the back door.
He's going to make sure she's alive, though, so do a little CPR on her on the way out for you.
Safety and fairness. He also wants the defendant's race to be considered. His office will largely no longer enforce some trespass crimes, resisting arrest, fare beating, sex work, and he's reducing charges that could mean no jail time for armed robbery, some of those cases, stealing from stores and storage areas of homes, and dealing drugs. When Bragg ran for district attorney, he promised not to charge shoplifters for stealing stuff worth less than $250, meaning you could potentially shoplift up to that amount and still get away with it.
Imagine that. This is exactly the plan. He's a Soros-installed guy, or backed, anyway. And this is it. You put these policies into place. You go no cash bail. You start making things that were a crime not a crime. And then things were a crime that you used to maybe not. Now they're really still a crime, but we'll never put you in jail for it unless literally up to murder. You could walk on a rape charge in New York City and just wait, you know, for the paperwork to arrive in the mail when your trial is.
Yeah, which you just have plenty of time to do some more raping while you're out like that.
Exactly. I mean, the irony is that they scream no one's above the law. Well, Trump, no one's ever been prosecuted for this thing about overvaluing your property. No one got harmed. The banks were happy to get their money. Trump paid them on time and sometimes in advance, paid a lot. And the relationship with Trump was beneficial to all of these banks. No one's complaining at all. But you went and dug up something because no one's above the law. Meanwhile, you feel free to choke someone out on the street, rape them, or assault them. There's no jail for you. You'll be home in time for dinner. This guy is just, I mean, literally. They found him on video on Saturday. And then they went to his last known address, which was a homeless shelter. They busted him there. And the transit cops found him, took it to MTA on April 4th. A couple of weeks ago, he's also accused of punching a 56-year-old woman. The woman he punched was a girl, a little girl, right in the face. Now that he's gotten out and hit a little girl in the face, now he's being held on $2,500 cash bail or $10,000 bond. Oh, records show that he was had a bench warrant out for the last assault. He hadn't shown up for his arraignment.
It's almost like they want to make their easier to solve crimes too, because they're like, okay, face puncher, that's Gonzalez, we'll get him.
Yeah. He's known for face punching. Yeah, I have a few guys in mind. The Supreme Court's waiting this I want to give you the basics of it. They're hearing a case. The case is Fisher versus United States. They're asking the Supreme Court to weigh the scope of the obstruction statute, the numbers, blah, 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 that penalizes anybody that corruptly obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding with up to 20 years in prison. Fisher entered the Capitol on January 6th, argues that his prosecution under the law for obstructing Congress's certification was an unprecedented expansion of this particular statute. The law was enacted as a part of the Corporate Fraud and Accountability Act, intended to target evidence tampering, focusing, or deterring on fraud and abuse by corporate executives. The first time it's ever been used to go after an individual, and they believe that it's not being used correctly. It's outside the context of a legislative investigation. This would affect hundreds of defendants that are charged with a felony over the statute. Over 353 of the 1,387 defendants that have been charged with a corrupt obstructing or impeding its official proceeding would be affected to their favor. I don't know. It would be nice to start to see, you know, some of the wrongs righted here, some of the prosecutions corrected, see where they've made incredible reaches dipping into this, which was intended as a part of the Corporate Fraud Accountability Act, not the individual dude, you know.
I think we're going to see soon a little bit of a revolution on cleaning some of this up, because they've just made there's too often that people have been over punished for it. They've been trying to be making examples of them, and it's insane.
Police things unions are coming up and with. Criminal justice advocate.
My bad.
Saying
what, people all of a sudden have common sense?
Yeah.
Not going to get anywhere with a judge in most of these cases where the prosecution wanted 8 years and she gave him 14. Yeah.
Well, I think we'll start seeing some appeals that finally get to a judge that they go, okay, this is, we do have laws against cruel punishment and the
Eighth
the,
Amendment.
Yeah, maybe. These numbers don't fit. You know, when you have it normally says, hey, this is a 5-year crime and we're throwing 15 years at somebody, there you're having some issues here.
This would be instrumental in getting along. Yeah, there's already been, let me see, there's some that have already been let out early in anticipation of this. Like, you know, we'll go ahead and let you guys out a little bit early because you're probably going to go free anyway. Where is it? Several. 16 have already been let out in early. I did not know this until today. I don't know the etymology of the phrase good morning. It's always very, it seems to me like you're wishing someone have a good, hey, good morning. Are you having a good morning? Good morning to you. Good morning. Or you just shorten it to morning. The good is implied. But I did not know that it is a racist symbol of white oppression. I'll let this young lady tell you all about it.
My guy. So let's talk about where the word good morning originated from.
First of all, it's not a word. It's two words.
It's a phrase.
Yeah, known as a phrase.
Good morning. All right, so during slavery times, when the women used to mourn about their child being taken away and sold to a different slave master, or if one of the family members did something that resulted into them getting whipped or killed, most of these things used to happen in the evening time, when a child was sold off or somebody was getting whipped for something. The black women used to cry all night behind it. Not even just the women, the black people in general, all the black slaves, male or female.
You get a gist of this?
Yeah. I mean, she's absolutely wrong, but
the white slave masters, the oppressors, will wake up in the morning time and they'll tell the slaves, did you have a good morning? Basically, did you have a good cry out? Did you do enough crying last night because of what happened to their family member a day prior? So the white oppressors came up with good morning.
All right. What's the actual reality?
Well, any literature you've ever read, that from early literature, you've heard the term good morrow.
Right.
14th century term that means
Shakespeare.
Good morning. It's a greeting of the beginning of the day.
Not to mention the production of this, you know, is not really. Her grammar is a little on the iffy side, just a bit.
And the jump cut that shows that she probably did that. She had to do that like 20 times to get what she wanted out of it.
All she goes on.
As a mockery towards black people during the slavery times, when they used to cry and mourn and grieve over what happened to somebody when they was whipped or.
Imagine me the poor schmuck who sees this young lady in a hallway in a business office somewhere at work and says, good morning. Oh, no. Sit down. Let me tell you about that. You got 2 minutes and 36 seconds.
There's enough things that you can take of oppression from that time period and terrible things that happened from slavery and terms and things like that that came from there that you don't have to start making them up. It's like trying to when they try to take the word picnic and say that was racist term.
Right. That's right. Picnic was racist.
Not the fact that it's a French term from the 15th right. century.
Oh, that's hysterical. Do you see this 45-year-old substitute teacher? This is in Nebraska. 3 a.m. They notice a suspicious, cops notice a suspicious vehicle parked on a dead-end road in Omaha. Nothing good happens on a dead-end road in Omaha. Well, they arrived to find in the backseat of a gray Honda Pilot a completely nude 45-year-old woman married, by the way, in the car with a 17-year-old male. A student from the school she taught at. They caught up with, after receiving a call about the car parked at the dead end, they found two people in the back seat before the panicked teen scrambled to the front seat, jumped in the driver's seat, and took off driving. Two blocks later, he wrecked the car, got out, and ran into the night wearing nothing but his skivvies. Ward, the lady, Erin Ward, married, teacher, remained at the scene. Putting on her clothes in the back seat of the car, she confessed to having sex with a boy at Burke High School. It's the only thing they've named after me so far. I have no ties to Omaha either. It's weird. Later found the kid hiding in somebody's bushes wearing underwear and a T-shirt. You know, when I see these, and they're an epidemic of them, and this is a very attractive woman. I'm sure she looks great nude, and this little kid was just having the time of his life. What does a husband say when you call him from the jail and say, babe, I need some, you'll never believe what happened. I was trying to tutor, you know, Philip on the anatomy and class. We got a big test coming up, and cop pull up, and I'm nude because I...
Good teacher.
I really...
Oh, most of the time, it seems like the husbands stay with him, which is embarrassing, I think, really.
And then I think, what's the impetus? Are they not giving it? Are they not, is he not hammering? They're not having a lot of sex? You're 45 years old, you ought to be fairly active and not, you're not old dude yet. Or maybe he's not, really hitting it. And this 17-year-old's like, go all night, Johnny?
That's possible.
Or maybe she's a pedophile, just likes a younger little dude.
I think that's more what it is. They just, they get a thrill out of it being a younger guy. She's probably in that, she's in her mid-40s. She's going through that little bit of a midlife crisis of, she's getting older.
So horny.
And a 17-year-old kid wants to have sex with her. So, of course, she thinks that's the hottest thing out there.
Man, think about the judgment of a 45-year-old woman who's a teacher pulling a car to the end of a dead-end street, getting completely naked with him in the backseat and having sex.
I like that he bolted in his underwear.
What was he worried about? Whose Honda Pilot was it? Hers?
It had to be hers.
Yeah, probably. Thanks a lot for wrecking the Honda Pilot, leaving me buck-ass naked in the back of the Pilot.
God.
I want to play you a little bit of this audio. I haven't heard the podcast yet. But recently, Barron Trump turned 18, and some liberal, you want to call them journalists or social media types, were like, Barron Trump turns 18. What's the word they use?
He's now fair game.
Yeah, he's fair game now. So these guys.
Yeah, I know that guy. He's also, I think it was more like sexual, too, because he's a gay reporter. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. So the PBD podcast. They wanted to meet him and see what was what. They ended up going to Mar-a-Lago and having eating a meal with him.
Did you hear the recent news about Barron Trump?
It's officially a fair game to come after me.
Yeah, good.
I don't care. Good. Do it.
Now, for those that don't know, Barron Trump is Donald Trump's youngest son. He's only 18 years old, and he's 6'7". What a unit. Now, to most people, this kid is pretty fascinating. He's got this mysterious thing going on about him because he doesn't come out and talk about anything. He doesn't have social media. He's rarely seen. Just interesting. So anytime you hear anything about him, it's like, oh, what is he going to say? All right, so Barron Trump actually asked Patrick Bet-David to have dinner with him. So him and the PBD podcast brothers were out there having dinner with Barron Trump, and they go highlight and highlight and highlight of all the things that occurred at dinner with this kid.
And have dinner with Barron. Now you got to realize, I'm so curious who this kid is, right? I've never seen Tom laugh this hard for an hour and a half, and we just watched Barron run dinner with stories, entertainment, everything.
It's witty, smart, hilarious, polished, like he was smart on politics. He's like, you know, everybody's always in a fight. There's left, there's right. I think one of the hardest I laugh is when he goes, look, my, because all of a sudden the music just comes on loud, right, Jesse? And we're like, what the hell is that? He's like, my freaking dad's the DJ. All you see is the president on his iPad, the lights in his face.
Nothing compares.
I pick the ones I like.
I don't want to. Love it because you look back and it's Donald Trump, the light on his thing, and Barron's like, guys, like I'll be in my room and the house is shaking.
Kobe and this and this and that, and everybody's kind of talking about.
I mean, he looks like he has zero personality whenever you see him. You know, he doesn't.
I don't think he likes the spotlight.
No, I don't think so either. And he's not really. I'm surprised he doesn't do social media. At 18 years old.
I mean, I think he sees everything else that goes on with his brothers and sisters, and why put yourself out there? Why, he doesn't have to. He doesn't really ever have to work a day in his life. He really doesn't want
True.
To.
He makes a funny reference to that at the end here. Hold on.
Their sob story. Yeah. And then Barron's like, yeah, same here. I mean, I was born in a penthouse of a building all the way at the top. Life was hard. Talked about being fed by a silver spoon. Yeah. Who would ever eat food with a silver spoon? Mine was gold. Like,
That's his dad talking right there. Oh, that is funny.
But I found an incredibly balanced, engaging, very witty, funny guy. And I really came away really liking the guy a lot.
Tough. Like, tough. To me, it was witty.
I was busting
sharp,
up.
Sharp, funny, sarcastic, tough, not weak. Like, hey, you know.
Grounded.
You know, they said the other day, it's officially a fair game to come after me.
Yeah, good.
I don't care. Good. Do it. Yeah. I get it. They've gone and done it to every kid. What's the difference? Why should I? It was very interesting.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. I want to listen to it. I just, you know, it's a first look into him, you know, maybe because he's 18. You think the Trumps kept him kind of, look, you're a kid, now you can't do it. They turned 18, I'm going to start doing some podcasts.
Yeah, I do think Melania kept a pretty tight leash on him.
Right, because that's the only kid they share, right?
Yeah, and she's, you know, kept his image, and he doesn't seem like he's a guy that just wants to be out in the spotlight. He's enjoying what he does.
Well, wait till he gets a little taste of it, a little taste of the popularity. But, you know, I had no idea. I thought really by what you've seen of him, when you see him rarely at events, just towering over his family, his face is very non-emotional, you know, he may crack a little bit of a smile, or lead you to believe that he's just, maybe unhappy or whatever, but I'm happy to know. Turns out John Morgan doesn't own OJ's Bronco. He leases it from the owners. I don't know if I sell it right now. The current owners, which are three people, say when the lease is up, they're going to put that thing on the market. Now that OJ's dead, they expect to get $1.5 million for it.
Yeah, now's the time to strike.
You think right now?
Yeah, you can't go a couple years.
Strike while the iron's hot?
Yeah.
You can't wait 2 years.
No, I think now is the time. He's dead. This is at its peak. You give it 2-3 years, it goes back to being. It's the most I think they've ever gotten offered was $750,000. So,
right,
if someone's willing to pay them double right now, you cash in.
Man, imagine that. Would they pay like $120,000 for it or something like that?
I think even less than that, like $88,000.
Who knows how much money they're making off of old John Morgan to lease it? What are you paying to rent?
He may buy it out on him. Who knows?
I'd like to have it, please. All right, when we return, Heather has answers. The future of the Joey Ramone biopic is in question, which I was really looking forward to that. And a pro-Palestinian protester who stood up in front of the Bakersfield lawmakers in Bakersfield, California, and threatened to kill them all is now realizing the limits of free speech.
Oh, there's consequences?
Yes, there are consequences. Hang on, it's the Shannon Burke Show.
Oh.
Palestine protester in Bakersfield, California, Reedy Patel, at a meeting of the Bakersfield City Council. She had some stern words. I'm going to play a few of them for you. I can't play all of them because she's got a little potty mouth on her. But you'll get the gist of the problem here.
the community members behind me to understand is that these electeds don't really care about you. The only thing you're going to do, even if you vote them out of office, Manpreet sold her soul after leaving Jakara Movement as their development director, now working for Wonderful Company, as farm workers are unionizing with Wonderful, and they still won't let them unionize. So she sold her goddamn soul. So regardless of whether you elect people into office, they'll backstab you, they'll let you die, and for that reason, you guys want to criminalize us with metal detectors, we'll see you at your house. We'll murder you.
Well, we'll murder you. She also said at some point, I don't have faith you'll do this. You guys are all human beings, and Jesus would have probably killed you himself. She identifies as non-binary, and then she threatened a violent uprising. They couldn't choose to oppress their constituents. I remind you that these holidays we practice, that other people in the global South practice, I believe in violent revolution against their oppressors, and I hope one day somebody brings the guillotine and kills all of you mother effers. The mayor quickly noted, that's a threat, what you said just there. So our officers are going to escort you out, and they're just going to take care of that right now. Officers did indeed escort Patel out after what she thought was a rather victorious, proud, pro-Palestine. I don't know how she got into union workers and stuff, but it was really, it's lengthy. Booked on 8 counts of intent to terrorize and 8 counts of threatening state officials for a total of 16 felonies. She remains in police custody on account of they finally came up with some bail. $2 million bond.
Womp womp.
Yeah. The last image I saw of her besides her display there, it was her in court in the jail uniform, sobbing away.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure they'll tone it down and, you know, they'll get her, let her sit and cool her heels for a little bit. And then
she'll play out of it.
Yeah, like disturbing the peace or something like that. But, you know, I think people are finally fed up. After this display in California and the Golden Gate Bridge in Chicago, you know, one of the busiest airports in America being effed with today by these people, I think you'll see some, I don't know if there'll be swift, legislation done, but a plan. What is the plan? Do we stand around like a bunch of, you know, schtups while these idiots block traffic? That's all the cops are doing.
We showed here in the state of Florida that can be done. We passed legislation quickly that says you cannot block a freeway traffic and they will come out and arrest you immediately.
I just don't. I don't understand.
That's what they need to do. I mean, it's again, you have the right to protest wherever you would like to protest, that you can go out and do protests safely, blocking the road and disabling city. Because there's all types of things you can, you know, you can say you disabled city infrastructure because, you know, city employees can't get back and forth across the bridge. You've got.
Here's yet another city right here. This is a big planned event.
Yeah. Go out and grab them, hog tie them and put them into a police wagon. Move on.
What I wonder is why aren't our ever watchful and protective government, you know, they're always on the lookout for hardcore right wing, imagery, names. I mean, you might, you know, Revolutionary War imagery, so we can monitor the social media and see what's going on. These are obviously planned on social media. These are a nationwide Palestinian protests across the United States. Major disruptions. Didn't see this coming.
You can correct me. There's bike paths on the Golden Gate Bridge. Are there not? Their walk paths?
Yes, I believe so.
Why can you not be? You can line the entire Golden Gate Bridge all the way down the bike path with people with banners and stuff like that, and people will see it all day long without you having to disrupt stuff. Down the road of the, and then if you're arrested, then you can say, okay, that's peaceful protesting. They weren't causing any issues. O'Hare Airport, you can line the entire road of every person that's going into the O'Hare
right.
with a person down that road with banners and with bullhorns, whatever you want
to
do.
They'll be more likely to support your cause or be sympathetic to your cause because you didn't F up their day and their flight plans. And you get guys, I guarantee you, the Golden Gate Bridge has been locked up since this morning. How many of them have pooped in a bag?
Yeah. I mean, look at O'Hare. There's people that are going to get their cars towed because they had to leave their cars just sitting in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
Because they had to catch their flight to get back home to their kids, or, you know, there's a funeral going on for their parents that they have to get to.
Man, that stinks. Or your Uber driver's stuck there for the rest of the afternoon, going broke.
Well, I'm getting out of that car.
Oh, I'm definitely getting out of that. I'm not leaving my car there, yes. But I'm definitely getting out of the
Sorry,
the
Tom. I'll
Sorry for your luck, buddy. I'll get you a double your tip there.
Yeah, 5 stars. You're doing great.
I was looking forward to this Ramones movie. It's a Netflix deal, only because, and not that I'm a big fan of Pete Davidson, but he's okay. He's funny. And I think he looks, if you put the hair on him, you know, and the whole look and the dumb bangs cuts they had, he looks just like Joey Ramone.
Yeah.
But apparently, Johnny Ramone's widow is upset because, and she's sued Joey's brother, Mitchell, and his manager for trying to cut her out of the film and the band's merchandising deals.
Does she have any say in the merchandising deal on it?
I don't know. It's not a book about the Ramones, he told the Post. It's not a Ramones story, he said. Oh, that was the book called I Slept with Joey Ramone. I guess this is loosely based on that. Yeah, she wanted to be part of the action. I mean, he's probably got a stake in the whatever the royalties are. So, you know, if he's dead, she probably gets it. But yeah, you're right. Who knows that she has any creative control over it?
If he gave her any control of that.
Well, thanks a lot. It's always a chick. It gets in there and messes things up. Heather?
Hello. That's fun to follow.
The Joey Ramone movie again.
The chick always messing things up.
Oh, I didn't mean it like that. Maybe I did, but it was subconscious. I don't know. If you have questions, send them to Heather. Heather has answers at gmail.com. And I mean, from anything, from, you know, where the AC relay is on your early model German car to your lesbian. You know, housekeepers coming on to you when your parents are gone.
Yep, we got them all. All right, dear Heather, since Shannon likes stats, I'm a 31-year-old female, probably a 7 out of 10. I have a career, not a family yet, and I'm very connected to my own family. On to my story. I was visiting my family in Titusville over spring break when I met up with an old college friend after not seeing each other for several years. We continued to hang out for the next 2 or 3 days and decided that we really wanted to get drunk together. So we did. We drank at his place and it was going great until it wasn't. We started getting a bit intimate and it resulted in a kiss. It was all consensual and I was okay with it. We ended up sleeping together afterwards and this is where it started going downhill.
Uh-oh.
It started out just fine, but suddenly he started saying weird things mid-sex that freaked me out. He started saying that he loves me even though we hadn't seen each other in years and never had anything romantic happen between us. He also asked me if I loved him too, and I was like, it's a bit early for that. And then he started talking about marriage, me being his future wife and all that. I was totally weirded out.
Oh, you're making love? This is going on? I mean, it's time for that lady. It's time for dirty talk. I'm sure that's what she was looking for. A little hair pulling, you know?
Sad, drunk, sloppy sex with her right now.
I was weirded out, but I let it all go. And then he started talking about me getting pregnant and having his children. Mind you, we were still having sex.
Oh, my God.
After the deed, he kept petting my stomach and repeating, I will protect you two. Shh, it's okay. I'll protect you two. To which I replied with us two, confused. And after all that, we were about to go to sleep until I made up an excuse to leave, since I got a really bad feeling. I was kind of scared that he wouldn't even let me leave, although thankfully he did, and I instantly called my friend when I started to walk away from his place, crying hysterically because I was so freaked out. Technically, I didn't do anything wrong, or at least I'm not sure, but I noticed me feeling like I was assaulted afterwards. I feel gross. I feel like crying. I don't know how to cope with it since I'm still so confused, and yes, I was on birth control when we hooked up. I did talk to him. Honestly, I got scared and freaked out, and that's why I left. I also tried asking him via text about why he said the things he did. He replied with basically, sorry, I don't know. I didn't mean to make you feel bad, and maybe you should just cut all contact to me as well. I have no idea what to think other than how gross I feel. I just now almost got into a panic attack thinking about it, and I don't know why. I feel disgusting, scared, like I can never trust another man again for some reason, mostly because it all started out so well. I just need to hear any thoughts you guys have and maybe how I could cope with this and maybe to help me understand my feelings a bit better. I'm honestly not trying to be a Me Too lady. Becca.
I don't think you could... you weren't assaulted.
No,
you willfully got in a sack with a guy.
It's okay to have regrets. That's what that is.
Yeah.
Never said no. It was consensual the whole way through. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The stuff that he was saying, I don't even, it didn't sound like maybe he didn't even recall it, but maybe he was just drunk or.
I don't know. That's crazy. She's
27?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't see it. I didn't see an age.
Oh.
She was visiting her.
Did you say she
was
in 30s?
In her 30s. Mid, yeah, 30s, I think she said.
31-year-old female. 31. You're right. You're right.
And a 7 out of 10, I heard.
That, yeah, that's what she said. So she's probably actually like a 10 out of 10.
You think girls downplay their?
Oh, yeah.
They're out of 10? Not me. I'm honest with you. I think it's creepy as hell, but don't turn it into...
something that's not.
Yeah, you probably get it off your... I don't know if you have a therapist, but maybe get it off your chest that way. But don't let it not go, make you not want to go on dates. More, let me trust... Trust me, normal men do not behave that way. In the very first time you've had sex with a woman you've been seeing for 3 days and you haven't seen her in, since, you know, 20-something years ago.
Yeah.
And was that what we're all about? Yeah, and very few
she's
single guys want...
just like a one-night stand or a spring fling or something like that.
I guess he's her age.
Yeah, I guess so.
So he's 31, too. Maybe he is looking at... I don't know. You know.
She had a night of weird, bad sex that, again, you chalk it up to a one-night stand thing. You said you hadn't seen the guy in forever. Guess what? You can go back to not seeing the guy forever because he's weird. And he even admitted that it's like, okay, I guess we can't talk to each other again. He might just be a weird drunk.
Here's what we know about this, though. That guys that are weird, or that are crazy dudes, aren't as good in bed as girls that are super crazy. She didn't mention that he rang the bell or the sex was incredible. She just said it was weird, and she had to get the hell out of there.
I mean, how could he possibly when he's spending half the time talking about trying to get married to her and his kids?
You're already talking about the colors of the centerpieces at your reception and then that, what kind of cake you want to get.
I'm surprised he made it all the way through and didn't fall asleep halfway.
Don't let it... you have to have had, by 31, another similar weird, you know... That's what you get for like a quickie one night stand.
Yeah, I think that's all that was.
Also, a bit odd to, I mean, do people really still get together and like, all right, we're going to get drunk tonight?
Yeah, and she didn't, one thing led to another, and I slept with him. I mean,
she wanted it. It sounded like she kind of wanted to head over that way for this going on. I mean, but
they were planning on getting drunk together alone. Something was going on.
When the first time he said, hey, let's go to my place and get drunk, I think I might see a couple of red flags there.
Yeah. But wasn't it her suggestion? Oh, wait.
I don't know. We decided to go to his place. Okay. We decided we wanted to get drunk together.
Yeah.
That's almost... Why did you even need to negotiate that?
Yeah.
Hey, let's get drunk together. Okay.
And what?
But like, I don't know. We don't want to do it out of the bar because that's dangerous. We don't want a DUI. Let's do it at my apartment. It'll be great.
And she should also have been red flagged by the copies of Wedding Planner Monthly on the coffee table as well.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that should never be in a man's house.
Wow. I bet that guy is just, I mean, if he knew what he said or remembered what he said, he's got to be absolutely ashamed of himself.
And kind of hoping she doesn't call him back.
Yeah,
ever.
Yeah.
That's why I say that's the fact that when she texted him, he was kind of like, yeah, you're right, we probably shouldn't talk anymore. I think he's super embarrassed about it, too.
You're right, that's kind of dumb of me.
Okay, this next one I really liked because I read it in Mary's voice. It just sounded like a very Mary's voice thing, but it's signed Mama Bear. So picture it in Mary's voice, okay?
All right.
Hey guys, my husband and I have an adult daughter who currently lives at home. She's been dating Tony ever since they met in college. They've been together for almost 6 years, and frankly, we all just love him. We've welcomed Tony into our family with open arms, spending many holidays and weeks in the summer together. He and my husband have developed a really nice, close relationship. Tony and our daughter seem like a really great couple and have been talking about moving in together. We're honestly thrilled. 2 weeks ago, Tony lowered the boom. He had cheated on our daughter. He begged her for forgiveness. After a dramatic few days, she agreed to stay with him, and then he broke up with her. Honestly, I feel quite heartbroken. I feel deceived by his dishonesty, and I'm so incredibly disappointed by his lack of integrity. I'm having a hard time reining in my emotions. When I expressed some of these feelings to our daughter, she got mad at me. I'm considering contacting Tony to give him a piece of my mind. Should I, Mama Bear?
Ooh.
My initial response is no, you shouldn't. That is not your relationship.
But, you know, the fact that he was able to schnocker them, you know, being the greatest guy ever, and, you know.
Formed relationships with all of them, it sounds like. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, Mama Bear feels hurt.
I'm really interested in the cheating part, what he did, and did she catch him, you know? Or did he just feel guilty?
He just want the drama.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, because if she caught him, it's one thing. But if he came to her with it, it's a different thing.
Yeah.
Because of his guilt and whatever. He's such a good guy, blah, blah, blah. But the fact that she said stay, and then he said, ah, you know what, is he going back with the girl he cheated on her with? More than likely. Yeah, I don't think you should call him. But do talk smack about him in all your circles.
Oh, yeah. Just tear him apart with all the people in the neighborhood.
Stay away from Tony. Mm-hmm. Backstabber. Cheater.
Yes, that will definitely make her feel better.
You just every like morning walk group you hang out with, or weekly white wine group. Yeah. You
at the Garden Club.
Oh yeah,
down to the Country Club.
Tony.
But I wonder why her daughter though is angry at her mother for being kind of mad about the whole situation.
I think people react differently. And maybe she just doesn't want her getting in on it. She's like, just leave me alone. I want to handle this my own.
Or maybe she thinks there's a chance they might get back together.
Yeah.
She don't want to, you know.
Maybe mom has stepped into relationship drama before.
I see. Maybe mom's meddling. Who did she cheat with? With mom?
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know. You be the judge.
This girl's name Stacy.
What?
Did not say.
I mean,
never mind.
Stacy's mom.
I don't get wrapped up in that stuff about my, you know, the kids and their relationship. Other than like one particular son comes and goes, I'm dating like a new girl and stuff. I'm like, okay, what color is her hair?
Purple.
Oh, and that's okay.
It's pink in the front, in the back it's blue. I'm just kidding. We love young Gavin LaDeaux. But he has a series of multicolored nose ring, you know, and, you know.
Please use a condom.
Oh, please. Poor, I feel bad for her.
Yeah, no, I kind of get where this mom is going because my oldest has recently started, like, dating. So I kind of, like, I've gotten to know the moms.
How old is your oldest?
He's 14.
He's like going steady and stuff like that, going to the movies.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. But, like, I've become friends with my kids' parents, my kids' friends' parents, because I need to know where they're going, you know? And so I find myself, when he breaks up with one of these little girls, like, oh, damn it.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to hang out with his mom or her mom again, you know? Like,
yeah.
Mom, that's weird.
I had a little girlfriend in junior high, and her mother was a teacher at the school.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm.
Thank God I didn't have her for a class. I didn't get the evil eye down the hallway after I broke up with her.
But did you get all the answers, like all the test answers before you broke up with her?
Well, I wasn't.
Oh, wait, you weren't in that class.
That was only, okay. Yeah, I was only dating her for access to the to the mimeographed copies of the cheats to the questions there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I took you out to dinner and a movie. Now go ahead and get me the Scantron answers.
The answer is always C.
All right. Got any more?
That's it for today.
All right. Heather has answers at gmail.com. We do it once a day in this hour. Heather has answers at gmail.com. Oh, I gotta put this over there next to that one over there. Thank you.
Thank you.
I can't see if I'm hitting the right one. That's not the right one. My eyes are so bad. Hold on. It's not right unless I do this right. Let's see. Squat. Thank you, Heather. Heather has answers at gmail.com. Gordon Ramsay's pub has been squatted. These are professional squatters. It's owned by Gordon. They are threatening legal action against anyone who tries to kick them out. It's called York in Albany Gastro Pub. It's for sale right now for $16.1 million. The windows are boarded up. The doors locked up. Kitchen utensils. They glued the locks. Chef's trying to sign over the building in a multi-million dollar deal. And this is, you know, they show the squatters hold up in the pub, one of whom could be seen barefoot sprawled out across a leather couch. Another one wearing slippers, scrolling through his smartphone, smoking a cigarette. There's empty bottles laying everywhere on the floor, a sleeping bag on another. They have put up their own legal warning sign on the front door, defending their takeover, caution against any eviction attempts. They say they have a right to be there, and since it is not a residential building, apparently the occupation of a person's non-residential property without their permission is not itself a crime in the UK.
There, yeah.
Jesus. So, though police could take action if crimes are subsequently committed, including damaging the property or stealing from it, that their notice says, take notice, we occupy this property, and at all times there is at least one person in occupation. Any entry or attempt to enter to these premises without permission is therefore a criminal offense, and any of us who is in physical possession is opposed to such entry without permission. The notice goes on to say the violation could result in 6 months imprisonment or a fine of $6,200. I mean, maybe it's easier there.
Apparently it's not against the law as long as you don't break anything.
Well,
even though I don't know how gluing the locks shut and boarding up the windows isn't destruction of property, but...
Or stealing all the empty wine bottles in there. Unbelievable, man. This is an epidemic.
Well, this is another thing that's becoming a big TikTok thing. There's a couple of them now that I've seen that are guys that they claim to be professional squatters, and they... one of them's a French guy, and he does. I mean, I've seen the videos of him where he goes
in France.
Yeah, he goes to like multi-million dollar houses, and he goes, "Oh, I know this guy will be away on vacation for 6 weeks, so I know I can stay here." And he goes to the back, and he slides the window open, and he just climbs right in. And he slides it back down. He's like, "At this point now, it's almost impossible to get me out until I want to leave." And
how do they end up? Does he just stay there?
He just goes until he wants to move on to the next one.
Wow.
And of course, now you start showing that to a bunch of people online.
Yeah.
They're like, "Oh yeah, I can do that too."
At the end game, though, they'll never win. It might take some time, but you have to say they're a tremendous length to be able to claim that property as your own. So it may be a while, but you're never there forever, and then you just go do it somewhere else where you get booted out of there. Oh my God, what a nightmare. The pub was temporarily closed while it was the financing was and the new lease was being put in place. During the handover period, a gang of professional squatters bypassed the security and the CCTV, got themselves in. They're boarded up in the building, slowly taking over the place, leaving their crap everywhere, and brazenly telling locals this is now their home. That's the part that really bothers me. Like, you can't do anything about it. I don't know. Is there a chance they could live there forever?
I mean, theoretically, at some point, they're going to have to all leave at one point, or he'll find a way to get them out of there.
Am I clear at this break?
You're clear at this break, yeah.
All right. When we return, we'll get to your remarks from the Florida Man Radio app. And in Germany, when they say no work on Sunday, they mean no work on Sunday. Hang on. It's a Shannon Burke Show on the Florida Man Radio Network. Make them a little withdrawal from the ATM machine, and right next to it was in heavy plastic bags stacks of cash just sitting there. In this case, it turned out to be $135,000 in mainly 20s and a 19-year-old. Finds it.
No, he's walking away with all that.
I mean, I would look around.
I think my feeling myself, if I saw that, I would think I'm on some sort of prank show or something like that, so I'm not touching it. or some sort of sting, or there's no way. I'm going to look over and there's like just a bag of $120,000 in 20s.
It's stacked up nice and neat. Yeah, it's, you know, it looks like it came from a bank.
I'm going to look, where's Ashton Kutcher? I'm getting punked, right? Is what's going on?
Listen to this.
A 19-year-old out to buy his grandfather some socks came across a bag with 100.
Out to buy his grandfather some socks.
That is the most random setup of all time.
Socks came across a bag with $135,000 just sitting near Wells Fargo ATM in Albuquerque. Jose Nunez Romanis told CBS affiliate KRQE he called the number on the ATM, then police, because he knew trying to keep the money meant he would have to deal with mom.
Back of my head, I was just thinking about my parents, especially my mom. What would she do if I came home with the money and what she would do with her chancla to hit me?
It turns out the Wells Fargo subcontractor, whose job it is to fill the ATM, left the cash there by accident.
Wow.
The mayor and police chief recognized Nunez for doing the right thing when no one was looking and invited him to apply as a public safety officer while still in school. Nunez also got a $500 check from New Mexico energy provider PNM, a gift card, and $500 cash from a local restaurant.
Okay, there was one name that didn't. Wells Fargo didn't throw this kid some cash. Why is the power department and a restaurant giving this kid a reward for not a
gift card for tamales? Yeah. I'm sure he's up to his eyeballs in that.
University of New Mexico Lobos football season tickets. And a signed football from former Bears linebacker Brian Urlacher. Nunez told the New York Times he's wanted to be a crime scene investigator or a detective ever since he was a kid. Katie Johnston for CBS Local News.
You know, he was afraid that if he came home with the money, he'd be hit by his parents. I'm afraid if I came home and told the story and didn't have the money, that I'd be the crap beat out of me. Are you? Man.
How do you, as a Wells Fargo employee whose job is to...
Whoops.
Where did I leave that bag?
Too much weed on the job, buddy. No, I bet Wells Fargo drug test. But yeah, just sitting there and this totally untraceable money.
It's an ATM's got a camera at it, so they would have been able to
see you walk up and walk away
with it. So they would have found you at
some
point.
Not after I put my disguise on.
But you're going to walk back around the corner.
Yeah, same tattoos, but now I've got like a bald head and a mustache.
You've got your shirt pulled up over your face. Just your belly hanging out.
You think that guy still has his job?
No. That's immediate firing. You don't leave $130,000 just sitting around because you got bored and wandered off.
There was a case here locally that never ever solved where a guy swiped a bag off the back of a bumper of a truck that was left on an armored car, I think. Or he was either drove the van or something. He drove away. It was like $12 million, I think they said. And it's never been solved. No one, you know. You keep your purchases small. Don't buy anything fancy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't
good,
go.
Good kid though to not and turn it in and
he got the he's got a month's worth of tamales and some cash and season tickets to the football game.
And the cops were like, "You can join us. You can not even an open position. He can interview for it.
Yeah, you can interview now for a position while you're still in school."
I'm disappointed in Wells Fargo. This guy didn't steal, or the company that was the contractor for it didn't help this kid out. Everybody else found some money to donate. But.
Right. Yeah, Wells Fargo, of all people. I mean, that would, I'm sure they're insured for it, once they investigated. But still, that's not going to make their premiums go down.
Now, Wells Fargo said he can interview for a teller position when he's old enough to interview for a teller position.
You want to hear Brian Stelter trying to explain why he gets potatoes mailed to him?
I can only guess
why. It's not just about the characters who are in it. It's also about the villains that the cinematic universe creates.
Talk about a bookie.
I like to think that I'm a bit character in that universe. I once had a potato mailed to me. It came in a FedEx box. It was an actual potato. And I showed it to my kids. And, of course, my kids are young. They have no idea why someone's mailing me a potato. It's because that within the Fox universe, I used to be called Humpty Dumpty. And from there, it became Brian's a potato. And so when I get random tweets from people calling me Spud, I know that, as you just said, they're in that in-group. It is their way of communicating to each other that they are in on the, I guess in this case, it's a joke, but it's also an insult,
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't call you the potato. It was potato head.
Yeah. Or big old baby.
And he didn't want to say potato head because right now it's on a podcast. He's got a camera on his computer, and it's like you, nothing screams potato stronger than him. I guess it was a joke.
I like how he tries to play it off, too. Yeah. He's like, oh, you know, those old guys at Fox News, they're all hilarious.
Shall we get to the remarks?
Yes.
From the Florida Man radio app, powered by Morris Family Farms and Morganic Meats, is a library of archived material in the podcast. They're commercial-free. They go up every night. Hit the little button at the bottom. It looks like a microphone. You can text the show, call the show from there, listen to this feed, the one in Fort Walton Beach, which I don't think is that different anymore, but sometimes some are hanky. Where's my button? There it is. Here we go.
Hey, do you guys know where Bill O'Reilly does his little show from? It sounds like he's sitting in a den in a big-ass chair smoking a pipe, like telling his grandkids a story or something. Like, bro, we're not your grandchildren.
He's at a desk in a den smoking a cigar, telling his children a story. I think he's in New York or whatever.
Iran only told us what they're doing so that we didn't blow them off the face of the planet. They do this every time. They did it when they struck Al-Assad when Trump was in office. It's so their people don't do a coup and throw the government out and trash the country. They don't get any outside news. They think that they obliterated Israel. Probably told them that they nuked America. I don't know. Beedoo, beedoo. Bunch of lying fools over there in the desert. Hey, Shanda, this is Denver. I'll do two today. One of the things in Iraq, I was near the Victory Over America Palace, which Saddam was building after the Gulf War. He told all the Iraqis that he beat us out of the country and forced us back. Of course, the French left all the construction cranes and all the equipment. When we showed back up, they left. And so it's just sitting there dilapidated mid-construction. Beedoo, beedoo.
So in the morning, I will greet you with a middle finger and tell you to have a crappy day. How does that work for you?
That's a good point.
I would like to ask that person if they could differentiate between the spelling of mourn and morning. They probably spell it the same way, and they don't know how to spell the word mourn.
Like she...
Beedoo, beedoo.
They were talking about mourning.
Yeah, like you spent the entire night mourning.
Oh, jeez.
Yes, did you know there's similar origins to the term good evening? The white slave masters were very insecure about the length of their penises, so they would chop off the slave men's penis to even it up with themselves. So they would say good evening, and just to remind them that they had chopped off the length of the penis. Don't get me started on good afternoon.
So Kate's doing the Total Wine and More commercials now? That's pretty cool. Good for you, Kate. For real, though, listen to that commercial again and tell me that's not Kate. Beedoo, beedoo.
Do we get it here?
It's one of the spots plays, yeah. It's a female singing, and it does kind of sound like
Oh, really? It might be.
If I remember correctly, here in Florida, Pensacola, I believe, they had some protester. I think it was the BLM or something like that. Blocked the road. Person owned the vehicle drove through the guy, you know, hit him. The protester was arrested for destruction of public property as well as for blocking the road, and had to pay a fine for blocking the streets plus pay for all the damages of the vehicle that hit him.
That were true, that would be perfect. I don't remember. I do remember there's a one or two instances that kicked off that bill. That may have been one of them.
Hey, what's up, guys? Right here. Man, that guy has no game at all. He's a shame. He's a shameful, shameful dude to all men his age. Pretty sad guy. Female didn't do anything wrong. She was being sweet and everything and having a good time, and he kind of ruined it all. I'd stay away from that guy. He's creepy. Beedoo, beedoo.
Why does Ray got to call us when he's eating? Like, he's clearly eating some Lay's potato chips or something there.
Also, the guy had it. I mean, they were having sex, so his game was enough to that point. It's right. Just his game is a little off of that when he gets there.
His pillow talk is not good at all.
Hey, guys, I'm going to tell you the real problem with Tony, and that's Mama Bear. She is so overbearing, you can tell already. I'm going to call him and give him a piece of my mind. She is overwhelming, and she's driving him away, and her poor daughter will probably never find a man because of it. Beedoo, beedoo.
Oh, it could have been Mama Influence. Like, he's sick of this, you know?
Hey, Mama Bear, don't call the dude. Work on getting your deadbeat daughter out of your house and getting her into a productive member of society. Beedoo, beedoo.
Damn, that's cold.
I heard Tony's got cooties.
Lily.
My stories I told about my stepson, Surfer, he had a girlfriend named Lily, he was quite fond of, and she broke his heart.
Todd Daytona, if I was Gordon Ramsay, had some funds available to me, I'd probably find me some Hoy Boys, some Moon Stompers, and some mod London scooter gang to go in there and straighten things out. I think you know exactly what I mean. Beedoo, beedoo.
I saw some footage of him. I think he does have a couple of bucks laying around. I saw him driving a $2 million Aston Martin.
Oh, yeah, he's absolutely loaded. If he wanted to find himself some hooligans to send in there, he could get them there.
Hooligans. What are you going first, the hooligans or the scallywags?
Well, you get the hooligans super drunk and then just let them go.
Hey, this is the Limey Yank from Fort Walton Beach. Just to say about that squatting thing in England, mate. It got so bad that now they have companies that will negotiate a payment for the people squatting to leave.
Wow.
So it's become a profitable business as well. Wow. Anyway, love the show. Beedoo, beedoo.
Wow. Imagine that.
So do you put that in your insurance? Like, as you set up your building insurance, like, all right, now we also need to put some money in squatting.
Squatter negotiation fees, got to build them in there. I know a group of motorcycle brothers that
they're great at removing squatters as well.
Real good at it. Real good at it. They only work for cash, though.
I forgot to say, the reason they do this is because the court system over there is so blocked up that by the time they even get close to getting these guys in court, that the fees are so high that it's just worth trying to pay the guys out to get them out of there.
Right.
Again, love the show, guys.
Thank you.
Take care. Have a great week.
Plus lawyer fees, or they would call them barrister fees.
But that just, that sets an entire industry of people that your whole doing is looking, okay, let's see. All right. That's a business. It's not personally owned. And we then, just break into this one.
How about another company that locates vulnerable squatting buildings for a fee?
Iran gave Israel advance notice that they were going to attack. Basically, they were saying, hey, get your defenses up, get on alert, because we're going to attack, and we want to see what you've got, everything you've got. That was basically a recon by fire. So when they get their little nuke ready, they want to be able to deliver it on spot and it not get shot down. Beedoo, beedoo. I'm over 60 now, but for the life of me, I just can't imagine where were all those teachers, those hot, good-looking teachers, when I was in high school. Beedoo, beedoo.
They were hot teachers. They just didn't want to, you know, they weren't horny.
Or it didn't get out. The more of the reason is because there's news, and you hear about it.
Oh, you think it happened a lot more?
I think it still happened. No different than it is now. It happened, but
before the internet?
Yeah, it was harder for, you know, it would become a small town scandal and not a news story.
National story, yeah. Where did that happen?
Omaha.
We're talking about it here, yeah.
I wonder if they'll be providing the same level of security in Seattle as they did during the Chalk Chop Chaz era. That'll be interesting. Beedoo, beedoo.
That was a bizarre time when a group of people could take over a part of downtown, several blocks of Seattle, and have the mayor go, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Blow some steam, kids.
Oh, yeah. You burn down a police station? Sure.
Yeah.
Set up a community garden, though.
But you're not allowed to come in. You can't, you know, we can't go in there. Someone's having a heart attack.
Yeah, Heather, I think there's an answer between those two concerns. The girl that had the weird sexual encounter with her old friend should call the family of the girl that got screwed over by Tony, maybe get her in touch with Tony. Then Tony could throw her a bang one night she would never forget. She would forget all about the bad sexual experience with that first guy and only have to live with the regrets of banging Tony, which was a terrible idea to begin with. It could work.
B2B. Or take the guy that talked about getting married all the time.
Yeah. Mama Bear would love him.
Yeah. We'll be picking out the colors today. Sit down.
So if I'm not mistaken, you say the kid found $130,000 cash. I would have taken that cash to the police department and said, hey, look, I don't know what's going on, but I found $84,000 in a bag by the bank.
Well, they know exactly where to cover the rest of it, I would imagine. But the good news is, when you find giant five bales of cocaine on the beach, you could turn in for it and be a hero. Right? There's no way to track that back.
Yeah. After I left the car lot just purchasing my brand new car, I happened to find another $84,000 here.
Missing one here.
Hey, guys. This is going back to Friday. Sorry. On them bears in Asia, you know, eating people or whatever, biting them, is it multiple bears, or maybe it's just one bear and he was just hungry an hour later and went back for more? Just wondering.
They're coming out of hibernation, I think.
Yeah, multiple bears.
There's anti-Israel protesters in New York City on the Brooklyn Bridge. It looks like cops are there to work on, you know, keeping that from blocking.
No, Kate's doing the safe light repair, safe light replace.
That's close. Yeah, I can see that, actually.
Todd Daytona. Jonathan Morris now has a freaking sword. I am simultaneously amused and concerned. B2B.
Did you see that on Facebook?
Who gave him a sword?
He bought a sword, I guess, in the panhandle. Came out, I don't know. It's a weird looking, it's not one of those cheese ball ones that kids have.
It's
up
not
on
a mall ninja sword?
No. It goes up and then it has a weird, bizarre turn. Like it looks like it's maybe Middle Eastern or some kind of, what are the?
Not a kukra? I'll think of it.
He was out there in a parking lot swinging it around like some kind of warrior. It's dangerous for everybody.
Yeah, so I'll send the barrister over and he'll place his boot, his brogan, quite forcefully betwixt your buttocks and you'll be leaving my property. Be-do-a-be-do.
Yeah, that's it. Pretty long, though. Yeah, what is that called?
That's a kukri.
A kukri? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he is going to use it to chop up a cow with or just threaten people. I don't know. Is it legal?
Yeah, they're legal. Oh. They're,
what's the length on that thing? Because he looked like it was 3.5 feet.
Most of them are like machete size.
I think it's just the fact that there's open lines of communication now. I couldn't text my teacher in middle school, this hot economics teacher I had. I sure would have probably, but I think that's the big difference. It's always been horned up teachers, horned up students. It's just the fact they can now communicate without anybody seeing it.
You would have slipped it out? It was just so, I don't know who the aggressors got. I've got to be the teachers here, don't you think?
It is the teacher's lot now.
Like they come on to the kids like, hey, you know, I'll get naked in the back of my Pilot.
He found $235,000 and I still ain't got my damn socks.
Those are the remarks for this hour from the Florida Man radio app powered by Morris Family Farms and Organic Meats. We do it again in the final hour of the show. Get the app and hit the button. So Ruby Wax, a TV personality, she met with him after he was acquitted of the 94 murders. She's now 70. She was doing an interview with Good Morning Britain. She said that after the pair had finished filming a documentary in 1998, that Simpson called her up on April 1st and left her a message and said, hey, it's OJ. I did it. April Fools. You imagine he called 100 people that day.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Who's next on my list?
I'm going to call Cato up.
Yeah. You know, I did it. April Fools. That can't be. I mean, it doesn't matter. He was found not guilty. They said, we opened up our hotel room. He claimed that he's initially looking for a knife after we finished filming. Jeez.
He also apparently, during the doc, showed her with a banana how he would stab a person if he was going to stab them as well.
This is how I would do it if I were to do it. Wow. She addressed a strange stabbing joke. I did a piece to the camera saying I've been fixed up. I don't know who my date's going to be tonight. The door opens. It's him. He was out there. All the trays were there from the food. He was looking for a knife to fool me. But when he opened the door, there was no knife, but he had grabbed a banana. The notorious double murder suspect has passed away. What a lovely, lovely reminiscing.
The notorious
he double murder. He fake suspect. Stabbed me with a banana and told me he did it April Fool's.
All right, now I got to call the next one.
Yeah, who's next? He's got his black book in one hand. Oh, this is going to be funny. Oh, it's OJ. I did it. April Fool's. That would have gotten around, would it? You know, if he's going he down.
No, everybody, yeah.
We're getting dark.
Have you ever survived a near-death experience?
I don't know that it was near death, but it made me feel like it could have been on the motorcycle.
Okay. Well, have you ever survived like two or three, four,
no.
five? Yeah. There's some people that, definitely really should.
They're prone to near death experiences.
They've just happened to survive more than one.
Wow. All right. We'll do that next. It's the Shannon Burke Show on the floor. Of this a-hole family at Lake Mead knocking over boulders in an ancient rock formation?
You know, I can give it okay if it's like kids. Like the video of kids, because kids are stupid. But there's a dad and parents are all in on this. So this is just an idiotic, ignorant family.
Unbelievable. Video shows two men shoving sandstone chunks over the edge of an outcropping. As somebody else screams, Lake Mead National Recreation officials say the incident took place near the Redstone Dune Trail. Damage is irreparable. Public information officer told local news there of the potentially heavy consequences to come for the two men. Destruction like this at a federally protected site can result in felony charges that come along with potential jails and fines and jail time. Man, it's not the first time. Why do you feel like you need to go in there and roll a boulder down a hill? So they have these guys or they don't?
Well, I think they have arrested them.
Good.
Which they need to. I mean, just come on, people.
And prosecute them. This is the greatest headline ever. If they gave awards for headlines, this is a pretty good one. Retired chiropractor killed Elvis impersonator by chloroforming him more than once during sex.
I love that they added more than once. Like, they just not did kill him with chloroform during
sex. Not the first time around. He made it through that.
Got to give him a second one just to fill it up.
He is accused of restraining and binding another dude, Thomas Kinder, 40-year-old, then administering the dangerous dose of chloroform more than once during sexual encounter, which led to his death. Yeesh. 4 days later, he went to the Saratoga Sheriff's Department and reported the body was in the basement of his home. Arrested and charged with second-degree manslaughter. And tampering with a body or evidence. Yikes. The two knew each other for a long time. And the chloroform appears to be consensual. Man.
Just don't get the chloroform during sex thing.
Me neither. Yeah, why would you ever agree? You mind if I knock you unconscious? You know, while we're having sex? And then, you know, when you wake up, I'll just make you unconscious again. Shouldn't be that difficult.
Wear the Elvis costume, though.
That's the part. Why would you? I mean, was he well known in the Saratoga area, New York, of being like the area's best Elvis impersonator?
Yeah, is there some couple that asked to cancel their wedding because their Elvis impersonator that does the marriage ceremony for them is now dead because he got chloroformed twice during sex?
During sex while he was bound and gagged. He went by the stage name TJ Green, also worked as a tour guide for a local Star Trek museum in Ticonderoga. And little Elvis stuff on the side and weird sex with retired chiropractors. Where do you even get chloroform?
He's a retired chiropractor.
I got some left around.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many layers to that. I mean, the guy was a tour guide for a small Star Trek museum
in Ticonderoga.
And then he did a little Elvis impersonator on the side.
I wonder if he had the sideburns. You know, if he's good, they do the sideburns.
Oh, yeah. You got to go. Well, what's he impersonating? Is he impersonating young Elvis? Is he impersonating Vegas Elvis?
I don't know. I got to go fund me for him. He brought compassion and energy to every performance, and he touched many lives. He touched the retired chiropractor Ronald Reyer's wife while he was bound and gagged and knocked out on chloroform. That's dark enough. Let's get darker.
Let's try.
It's Disturbing History with EZ. There's a lot of history out there. Some of it isn't in the books.
Sometimes disaster looks for you. There's no escaping it.
I know people that are always, you know, like Matt are from Laguna. That guy's always in the hospital getting something replaced, something broken. This is infected. I got, you know, can't do, I got a new knee, new hip.
He's always got the dog or the cat or the,
yeah,
his triptome or Matt, we love you, bud. You gotta stay safe. Get a helmet, man. But for some people, it just seems like danger continues to follow them. They've survived. They've moved on and gone right into it. There's a couple of them. Really won't talk. There's speaking of, I think the sinking of the Titanic was today, yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday and today, yeah. Kind of thing in between. But there was a guy that was on the Titanic. I think it was a girl. She was saved, went over to another ship, like immediately sunk on that one, too. Stop letting her go on your ships.
Wow.
There's a couple others. There's a Portuguese guy that he says he survived like 6 sinking ships. It's hard to verify, so it's a little difficult with him. But there's some people that have, and they've disaster just follows them around, especially when you're on your honeymoon. And that's what happened to the poor 2 Swedish people, Stefan and Erik Svanström.
Svanström.
The disaster seemed to accompany them on their honeymoon. In 2011, the pair set off with their baby daughter, Eleanor, on a planned 4-month adventure holiday to various countries. I got to move to Sweden, because if you can just like, hey, we're going to have our honeymoon. It's going to be a 4-month worldwide adventure trip.
Wow. Nice.
I included various countries, including Indonesia, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, China.
China.
Well, they would have been forgiven for thinking surviving a blown off bus roof during a monsoon in Indiana would be the low point of their holiday. Instead, though, it was only the beginning. In Australia, they survived a bushfire in Perth and then a cyclone in Cairns. In New Zealand, they were fortunate enough to be rerouted to miss a hurricane in Christchurch, only to find themselves in Tokyo when the earthquake and tsunami hit Tohoku in March 11th of 2011. According to Mr. Svanström, he also survived a 2004 tsunami in Southeast Asia.
Wow.
Guy needs to stop traveling.
These two need to get a divorce immediately.
That is one of those where you're like, hey, we're on a Hollywood trip.
We've been in 8 disasters so far.
Yeah. 8 disasters. Like, okay. Maybe the man upstairs is giving you some advice here.
Yeah.
Even if it was like, hey, I threw an earthquake at you and you missed it and you still kept going. There's many people that survive a hurricane, but few get to survive 2 of them when they're less than a month old. And that was little Gabriella Cohen from Houston, Texas. She was only a few days old when Hurricane Harvey hit the state. And despite widespread damage, their house was left largely intact. Her family, though, was worried about water supplies, fire, and other problems from the aftermath. So they decided to temporarily move to their second house in Miami, where they felt they could be more relaxed with a new infant. And then 3 days later, after arriving in Miami, the family had to evacuate for a second time as Hurricane Irma hit the area. After an 11-hour drive, they found a small town in Alabama where they waited out the hurricane. They couldn't go back to their Miami home as there was no water and electricity there. So less than a week later and 3,000 miles later, the Coens arrived safely back in Texas and have nicknamed their daughter Storm since then.
Ah, that's a good one. Damn.
Sometimes you can be a president to survive multiple disasters.
You mean like your kitchen burned down and you almost lost your Corvette and your wife and your cat and your son died in battle in Iraq?
Yeah. Or also you could be Gerald Ford.
Oh, Gerald Ford.
Mm-hmm. September 5th, 1975, Lynette Frome shot at President Gerald Ford in Sacramento, California. Secret Service tackled her, and although the shot was fired, it missed its target completely. Frome, a former drug addict and cult leader of old Charles Manson follower, apparently tried to kill the president again to gain Manson's favor. Only 17 days later, on September 22nd, 1975, a former Marine interfered with another attempted assassination attempt on President Ford, this time by Sarah Jane Moore when she tried to shoot Ford while leaving a hotel in San Francisco, California.
Wow.
Incidentally, Frome and Moore were sent to the same prisons in West Virginia and both managed to escape in 1979 and 1989, respectively. But they were actually both, you know, back in jail.
Right.
Moore was released in parole in 2007 and Frome in 2009.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, Frome, I remember she got out.
Yeah, Moore was also released. But yeah, they really hated Gerald Ford.
I get it. So he's probably had more attempts than any other president, right? I mean, we know one for Ronald Reagan.
I want to say Teddy Roosevelt may have had more.
Bully.
But, you know, they weren't very successful. I mean, they hit him, but
yeah, he had...
I don't think you could actually bring him down with a bullet.
Hmm.
Sir Adrien Carton de Wiart. Hmm. He was from Belgium and had Irish parents. Won himself the reputation of the unkillable soldier. He fought in and survived three wars. The Second Boer War, World War I, and World War II. He did lose an eye and a hand, though. Although he was too young to join the army, not being a British subject and not having his father's consent, de Wiart quit his studies, took a fake name, and pretended to be older and left for Saudi Arabia to fight in the Second Boer War, where he was shot in the chest and sent home. After his recuperation, he returned to war. De Wiart was severely injured on 8 occasions in World War I, and despite losing his left eye in Somaliland in 1914, he returned to fight.
With one eye.
And a bullet wound already. And in 1915 on the Western Front, he suffered gunshot wounds to his skull, ankle, hip, leg, and ear. And then decided during World War II, he was assigned a commanding officer role and luckily didn't lose any former limbs. However, he had to survive in a prisoner of war camp at the age of 61. In 1943, he was appointed British representative to China until his retirement in 1946. Despite all his suffering, he wrote in his autobiography that, frankly, he enjoyed war.
He just liked it, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Somebody
does.
Weirdly enough, might have been the illegitimate son of King Leopold II as well.
Just going to throw that one in there.
Yeah, it's just... while on patrols in the waters off the Dutch coast on September 22nd, 1914... the HMS Aboukir and two other British cruisers, the HMS Hogue and the HMS Cressy, were spotted by a U-9 German submarine. The Aboukir was hit first, and the Hogue started recovering the survivors. A 15-year-old Wenman Kit Weckerman Musgrave, a midshipman, swam for his life, and he was one of the survivors picked up by the Hogue. Unfortunately, the U-boat also hit the Hogue, and young Kit was once again back in the water, at which point he swam to the Cressy, and must have thought, what are the odds of being hit by a third time? But Cressy was immediately hit after that. And into the water he went again.
Jesus.
Welcome Musgrave was saved by a Dutch fishing boat, and a few hundred more survivors were saved by other boats. And what was one of Britain's worst moments on the naval record, the young sailor survived three U-boat attacks in less than 90 minutes.
Wow.
You said you had somebody that's been hit by lightning multiple times.
Yes.
Well, yes, he's not been hit by, like, this man. And that's Guinness World Record acknowledged Roy Sullivan. He's a park ranger in the Shenandoah National Park in Virginia. And he is nicknamed the Spark Ranger. He's the person who's been hit by and survived lightning the most times. A whopping 7 times.
And survived.
Yep.
I remember seeing a picture of this guy in the World Book, Guinness World, where he holds up his hat with a burn hole in it.
Yeah.
7.
7. He was struck the first time in 1942, losing only a toenail, which I'm assuming the lightning hit and just shot the toenail off into space. Then again, he was hit in 1969, 1970, He took a little time off, got hit in 1972, 1973, had a little more time off, 1976, and then finally in 1977.
When did he finally go, you know, it's not for me, this park ranger stuff?
Honestly, it didn't. His injuries included burns to his chest and other places, and his hair burned twice.
Ugh.
Even his wife, Pat, was hit on one occasion in 1970 on their front porch. Then you think, my God, this guy is unkillable.
Yeah.
He's been shot. He's been hit with lightning multiple times. Well, Sullivan eventually died from a gunshot wound to his head in bed on September 28th, 1983.
Well, my friend got hit twice because he plays trombone in an outdoor wedding band in Central Texas.
The only person that could take Sullivan's life was his himself. So.
What do you mean?
Well, he killed himself.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Well, all this lightning messed him up in the head. Because you see these pictures, man, lightning, you know, like idiots, you're not supposed to be hide under a tree. And they're under the tree, and the tree gets hit, and the bodies just fall. And they're just done.
Discover Magazine actually included him on a 2008 list of memorable survivors alongside a Soviet World War II pilot who jumped out of his plane without a parachute at 22,000 feet and a sailor who drifted at sea for 76 days. The odds of the same person being struck by lightning seven times is 4.15 in 29 zeros after that. So
wow.
I'm not exactly 100% sure what
you should have bought a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
Damn.
There's very few disasters that are terrifying as a tsunami.
Oh, yeah.
Mainly because you watch the water go out and all the idiots that go immediately running in. Should be, if you are coastal and you're not teaching your kids, like, hey, if the water disappears, run the opposite direction as fast as you possibly can go.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be bad. There's too many people. It's terrifying to watch that footage with where that water went out on the beach, and there are people running out like, oh, look at all you can get to all the seashells out here.
And then they're just...
They were gone.
Yeah. Well, that one, the last one, it killed like 200,000 people.
Yeah.
Horrible.
This is that one in the Indian Ocean. On Boxing Day 2004, it killed nearly 228,000 people. And surprisingly, though, one man survived, not one, but two. And his name is Zarul Fawadi. Fawadi was one fortunate man who survived earthquakes and tsunamis on December 26, 2004, and later on March 11, 2011. He ran away from the tsunami in Indonesia in 2004, thinking that it was the end of the world. Thankful to have survived, he moved to Japan as a doctoral student, where he was on campus when again disaster struck on March 11, 2011.
Fukushima.
When an earthquake and tsunami struck Tohoku. From the disaster, 16,000 people were killed and the nuclear crisis was looming. But Fawadi got away with only being left without power and water at his home. He isn't the only man who survived two tsunamis. Fellow Indonesian Rahmat Sofil. He also survived the 2004 tsunami and the one hitting the Sulawesi Island on September 28th, 2018 after a magnitude 7.5 earthquake. Don't hang out with that guy anymore.
No kidding. Well, at least maybe he has a sense. You know, they say animals know in advance when there's a tsunami coming and they all head for the hills.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got that same sense.
Many soldiers have fought and survived wars, even being POWs on different occasions, but some have had to endure it more than once. Wendell A. Phillips was a radio operator on the C-47 aircraft for the U.S. Air Transport Command, using bases in England to operate during World War II. While there, he survived five separate plane crashes.
Jesus.
After the last one in late 1944, he and his fellow crew members were captured by Germans and taken to a POW camp in Belgium. After 33 days, Phillips and two others escaped through a hole in an electric fence and fled for 3 days before French resistance fighters helped them return to American forces. Phillips was reassigned to the China-India-Burma Theater to distribute supplies to forces fighting against the Japanese. Here, his crew faced another plane crash, and Phillips became a POW again.
Ugh.
He endured torture at the hands of the Japanese, apparently losing his fingernails in an attempt by his captors to get information from him. He was released when the Japanese finally surrendered in 1945.
Yeah. They were horrendous in the torture.
Yeah. He might as well just stay home at that point, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, no planes. Just leave me here.
He's been in eight airplane crashes,
two-time POW.
Yeah. We'll sit this one out.
You know, he's mean, too. That guy.
I bet. He's lived through two POW camps.
Yeah.
You got to be tough to survive a plane crash. Military planes, it's not like they're loaded with safety gear. You know?
No.
It's like you're in a tube with framing and maybe a chair you could be belted into. That's about it.
But honestly, more people kind of survived out of those, weirdly enough, because of the they were built kind of to take abuse and land. That's where we get the survivor bias from. I've never seen that before. Back in World War II, they were bringing back planes from bombing runs and things like that. And they were looking through and they're like, all right, everybody that survived, we need to figure out. We lost a lot of good men. So we're going to learn how to reinforce the planes. So they went through and took where the bullet holes went through the planes and everywhere. And they went, okay, well, all these bullet holes are here, so we need to armor here. And somebody at least smart enough went, whoa, whoa, whoa. He goes, the bullet holes here, the people survived, so we don't have to worry about it. It's the planes that went down where the bullet holes were all in these other places. Those are the areas we need to reinforce because that's where it's unsurvivable if they get hit with bullets. So.
Right. And plus, you're going to weigh the plane down with armor.
It's survivor bias. It's going, you look at it, you go, okay, we survived because of this and not the fact that it was all the other stuff on the outside of it that you kind of didn't really notice what was going on.
They don't have survivor's guilt?
No.
No?
No. I'm still breathing on this earth. There's no survivor's guilt right now.
Oh, yeah.
Violet Jessup. She was a stewardess on the RMS Olympic. Violet was the eldest of Irish immigrants living in Argentina. And when her father died, she moved to England. And her mother became a stewardess on the Royal Mail line while Violet attended a covenant school. When her mother's health deteriorated, Violet also found work as a stewardess on the White Star line before joining the HMS Olympic. In 1911, the HMS Olympic collided with the HMS Hawk, the first of three shipwrecks Violet would survive on her more than 200 voyages.
Wow.
It's amazing they continue to let her on because as superstitious as people, their sailors having a woman on board already was a little iffy. Yeah,
back in the day.
She already had two on her. I'm like, oh, no, we're not putting one on. She didn't really want to make the popular move to the HMS Titanic, but was eventually persuaded by her friends. It was on this, the Titanic's maiden voyage, that Violet survived the second shipwreck by being taken to safety on one of the lifeboats. Afterwards, she was transferred back to the Olympic in 1916 during World War I, now being trained as a nurse. She joined the war effort by working on the HMS Britannic, which hit a deep-sea mine and sunk in the Aegean Sea in 1916. She had a jump out of the lifeboat in time to escape the ship's propellers, which caused a fractured skull. She was nicknamed Miss Unsinkable and went on to continue to work for the White Star Line. Again,
she's unsinkable, but every boat she's on is not.
She died at the ripe old age of 83 years old.
Wow. The cracked skull.
And then there's Tsutomomi Yamaguchi. He is one of those guys that you're just going to take a guess that as one of the persons that may have survived tsunamis and earthquakes, Yamaguchi survived something completely different. As many as 150 people survived both Hiroshima and Nagasaki atomic bombs on August 1945, and one of those was Mr. Yamaguchi. Yamaguchi, an employee at the Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, worked in Hiroshima, for 3 months when, on August 7th, he observed the atomic explosion. He was burned badly but found his way through a river filled with dead bodies and got on a train back to his hometown of Nagasaki. He returned to his wife and 5-month-old son, where he got treated for his wounds. He reported for duty on August 9th, but his superiors didn't believe his accounts of what happened. While still in the meeting, Nagasaki was hit too, and Yamaguchi survived.
So he was telling them about the bomb he witnessed in Hiroshima. Like, come on, Nagasaki.
Big bomb. Yamaguchi.
How'd you burn yourself? Would you fall in a fire pit or something?
Yamaguchi lived to the age of 93 years old.
Wow.
Unfortunately.
No long-term damage from radiation?
He did die from stomach cancer, but again, 93 years old. His wife died of cancer as well, as did his son, but at the age of 58. So.
Oh, yeah. Maybe he, as the lineage goes further.
Yeah. I mean, still to survive to.
Yeah, but back then, Nagasaki didn't even hear about this. They were like, what are you talking about, bomb?
I don't know what you're talking about.
And while he was in a meeting with them, he got bombed?
Yeah. Well, I was in a meeting, come back to work. He was like, hey, I'm, you know, got a little burns here. I need maybe a couple days off.
Like, I told you so. I tell you so. Big bomb coming for you. Let me get the right. There we go. That's the only person that was in the both cities?
150.
150 were in both cities? Yeah, like they got the hell out of...
Left Hiroshima and went to Nagasaki.
Man, that's some bad stuff in Hiroshima. Let's go to Nagasaki.
What are the odds? Come on.
Chill out. Yeah, what are the odds we'll get hit again there? They probably should have stayed put. Except for all the radiation going around there.
Yeah, it's probably best to get down out of there.
Was that?
You did, yep.
Yeah. When we return, the world's oldest conjoined twins have passed away. Do you remember the Lori, the other one? There's some weird updates. Lori and Dory were their names. They're attached at the head.
Yeah, I do remember.
One's facing one way, one's facing the other. They lived to be 62 years old.
And never could watch the same TV at the same time.
No. You won't believe at some of the stuff these girls did in like individually, where the other one just kind of, obviously was there. And the careers they had. And interestingly, one of them found a new gender on her journey. I don't know how you, how you solve that. We'll do it next. Stick around. It's the Shannon Burke Show on the Florida Man Radio Network. The world's oldest conjoined twins. You knew them as Lori and Dory Chappelle. Connected the head, the skull. The specifics of their deaths weren't disclosed. I would imagine if one dies, the other one's got to go pretty quick, right?
Yeah, they immediately go septic, and it's pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. Yikes. They outlived the second oldest recorded female conjoined twins by 9 years. Later in life, Dory identified as transgender and went by the name George.
That's because he didn't want the name Dory anymore.
Yeah,
pretty bad. Awful parents, if they're already conjoined twins, you give them rhyming names.
Holly and Dolly.
Give them Lauren their own names.
They're connected to each other. So here's some stuff you may not have known. They had very distinct lives. Dory built a successful career in country music. Did you know this?
I do remember them making South Park made fun of them about.
While Lori, this is one I don't. What is 10 pin bowling? Is it the same as bowling?
Is that the one that's like the smaller pin one?
It may be, but Lori became an award-winning 10-pin bowler. And in the 90s, Lori worked at a hospital laundry, adjusting her schedule to support Dory's international tours as a country singer, where they went to Germany, Japan. Let's be honest. People didn't go to see her sing, right? They went to see what the other girl was doing while she was singing.
What was she doing the whole time? Was she just sitting there having a sandwich or something
looking,
like that?
You know, because they face different directions.
Yeah.
So if she's facing the audience, the other one's facing the drummer in the back line. Wow.
Did they both dress up in country western gear or?
Or maybe the other one dressed just all in black so she didn't really, you know, distract from the performance.
Oh, so like the puppet performers in the Lion King Broadway show.
Yes. Yow. They didn't want any surgical interventions. I don't know that there was one when you're connected to the cranium. Whew, that's terrible. I mean, it's not terrible. It's kind of terrible.
I mean, they were both wildly successful, so.
Yeah, let's face it, they weren't wildly successful because she was a brilliant singer. They were wildly successful because people wanted to see
their freak shows.
Conjoined twins at the head. It was an upscale Barnum and Bailey, more or less.
I mean, they missed it by 67 years to be traveling freak show Barnum and Bailey people. I mean, they made something out of their lives. It's pretty impressive.
You know, in Germany on Sunday, there's nothing. I mean, I can remember growing up in Texas with blue laws. Like, you couldn't buy certain things on a Sunday, like a hammer. You couldn't buy a hammer because God didn't want you to work. They were just really strange. And so, I mean, now, all those archaic laws are gone. So I can't. None of us can really imagine going out on a Sunday and not being able to get anything except for Chick-fil-A. We're 7 days a week. in Germany, a long time ago, their work-free Sundays, they earned that. It's was a Christian thing. Germans aren't supposed to go to, they're supposed to go be going to church or whatever. The unions fought for no work on Sunday, and they won. Some retailers are like, well, why wouldn't we be open on a you know, elite, we're not hiring anybody.
If everybody has the day off, you would think they would want to come buy stuff on their day off.
Right. Yeah. So a company called, a supermarket chain called Tegut, created a fully automated kiosk so customers can shop without a single human employee out there. They're called Teos. They look like barrels with grass roofs. They carry over 1,000 essential products like milk, potato chips, stuff like that. Once you made your selection, a robot cashier helps you check out. But Germany's service sector union, Verdi, is worried that competitors would lose out as they had to close their stores on the day of rest. And soon business lobbies might push for legal changes, eventually pushing workers back into stores on Sundays. They're adamant about it. We don't work on Sundays. But the folks at Tegut, they're like, look, being closed on Sundays means a drop about 25% of our sales. And a judge agreed with them. They cannot work. Robots can't even work on a Sunday.
Mm-mm, nope. No robots even on the Lord's Day.
That's just bad business.
Now that's the power of unions sometimes.
But these are like Catholics unions, workers unions, all the other.
Well, they got all the Catholics and the Protestants got together with the union and said, hey, we all want to have Sunday off. We'll tell everybody it's because
of a day of rest.
Day of rest. It's, you know, it's part of our Christian faith.
It's been in their constitution for some time. But this is really, you know, this is a nation siding with a union, more or less, because there are no humans there.
Yeah. It's
no one's working.
It's basically a vending machine.
I mean, can you still get a soda in another vending machine somewhere in Germany on a Sunday? They pull the plug on us.
They go around and unplug everything.
They're worried that the union, that the store's competitors would lose out because, you know,
okay,
they had to close. Get yourself one of these machines.
Yeah, go get yourself one of these machines. And that will at least on Sunday, if you need to go get some kraut and brats, you at least have a place to go.
Yeah. That's weird. You can't even go to a pub on a Sunday?
I don't think anybody can work.
That's taking it to an extreme, right?
I mean, I don't know if maybe some of the pubs that, and I have to ask somebody that's from Germany, or maybe they can like voluntarily, you're open, but you can't force if it's union-based.
Right. You can't force somebody to come in on a Sunday. It sounds like they don't want any commerce happening at all during their Sunday day of rest. I mean, you worked in the restaurant business.
You never had weekends off.
Oh, my God. It was horrible. Horrible.
Always the most delightful people who came in on Sundays, too.
Sunday brunch people.
Mm, oh, yeah. Lovely. So sweet.
This company I ran a restaurant for in Austin called Fousey, some upscale Italian joint. They used to do these things on Sunday. They would mail out like 2-for-1 Sunday brunch coupons to everybody. To the point where we'd go be booked up with reservations, we'd still have a ton of people show up. And they are mad. They're mad that they can't, you know, utilize
it. Yeah, I've seen enough of it.
I've heard ladies, women scream in my face, this is BS, using the word. I'm like, it's Sunday. You're still in your Sunday go-to meetings here. Your kids are wearing little ties.
Oh, I've had red hats yell at me and...
What do you mean?
The red hat ladies, the you know, the Christian group.
On their way home from church.
Oh yeah, and they create some colorful language.
Sundays are part of the, you know. There's only one place that's not open in America on a Sunday that, you know, that means anything, and that's Chick-fil-A, and that's kind of their shtick. You know, if they were to go, you know what, we realize we could lose or we could gain 30% of retail sales on a Sunday they open, they'd probably lose. A lot of what makes them special.
Yeah, but people would be there.
You think?
Oh, if you could get a chicken biscuit on Sunday morning.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew a guy used to get them on a Saturday evening and keep him yeah, microwave on Sunday morning. This is a really cool story. I didn't see this. Boban Marjanovic, Houston Rockets star. The Houston Rockets, they were up 105-97 late in the game. The I don't know where are the chicken sandwiches coming from. Speaking of chicken sandwiches,
it might be Chick-fil-A. I don't.
So there was a deal that if any player missed two free throws in a row, everybody got a chicken sandwich, free chicken sandwich. So they were playing the Clippers. He realized what was going on. He was someone got fouled, and he was to step up and throw his free throw. So he at the first throw, he might not have realized what was going on. He missed it, trying to hit it, but missed it. Then the crowd started getting in, you know, they realized this is the big deal. He realizes what's going on, and he totally just woofs it off to the side. And the crowd goes bananas and points his fingers at the sky. The broadcast booth for the Rockets lost their minds. He said, oh, they gave him free chicken. He's a man of the people. He gave out free chicken. There wasn't much for them to play for outside of avoiding a losing season with a victory. They were, you know, been eliminated from the playoffs for a while. But they got that win, 116-105.
And he got to have some fun.
Yeah.
As and, part of the game sometimes.
And what about that, the just the goodwill, you know, that it does for the base of that team?
Well, I mean, well, that was the opposing team, though, that he won chicken for.
Oh, for the Clippers team?
Yeah.
Free chicken! Well, he couldn't have played it better. They would have hated his guts. That would have been a real dick move. You got your whole Clippers fandom in there, and you go, oh, yeah, just you sink a...
Yeah, oh, you really line that sucker up.
He had no choice, really, right?
Well, they were winning already. They're out of the playoffs. Why not have a little... I think if I remember correctly, he used to play for the Clippers anyway, so he knew about that promotion.
Yeah, he played for them.
So, you know, he knew about it.
They still kind of like him. He's a former player. You really know the fix is in a marathon, in this case a half marathon, when there are at least two Kenyans and one Ethiopian and a Chinese runner ends up winning in the end. It was captured on a ton of footage. The runners identified as Robert Keeter and Willie Mangat from Kenya and Dejean Helu from Ethiopia, seemingly making the way for He Jai, a Chinese runner, to the finish line. The three athletes can be seen gesturing towards the finish line and apparently slowing up to let him win. Everyone said it seemed orchestrated. Beijing Sports Bureau confirmed that an investigation is underway. We have taken this matter very seriously and will communicate the findings to the public, which will show exactly what we wanted to show. They're competing in the Beijing Half Marathon. The slow time recorded by Abdi Naji as he won Rotterdam Marathon brought memories of what the world would witness.
He was expected to win pretty easily.
Yeah, Beijing Sports Competition Management and the International Exchange Center also announced their very own inquiries.
What inquiries are going to be? Did you let that Chinese guy go? I'm like, no, you see how fast he was running? We had no chance. Yeah. No, yeah.
My hamstring.
He was booking it. I think he conserved all his energy. He was ready for that last little bit.
Yeah, he beat us in the end. He's better prepared, obviously a better athlete. So Weibo, which is kind of China's X, more or less, people are disappointed and frustrated, saying this will certainly be the most embarrassing championship in He Jai's career. Another one said, with such a major organizer and such a well-known event, this really pushes the sportsmanship to the ground in shame. I mean, this is obviously, you know, leader Xi Jinping wants his runner to win this race, the Beijing Half Marathon. What do you think they paid him?
Oh, probably a couple, you know, $10,000, $20,000. I'm not sure what the payout was, but...
But if you could start fixing races like that with guys from two other countries, China's got a lot of sway.
Yeah, but again, it's the Chinese half marathon. It's not like...
That's true. Not the Olympics.
It's not the New York Marathon or the Boston Marathon or the Olympics. So I'm sure the payout wasn't exorbitant. And if you go, all right, yeah, I'll run. I'll put a good time in. But
whoops.
Once I get near the near the end, well, I mean, I'll stumble on a rock and let...
But you can't be like going, hey, come on, dude. Boy, wave it like, hurry up, man.
Man, you are killing me. I can't go any slower. You got to speed up a little bit, man.
So, this guy wasn't a schlock runner. He had won before, right? Let's see.
Yeah, he won a couple years ago, but they also had some questions on him winning that one, too.
Yeah, the 2023 Asian Games Marathon gold medalist, half marathon. They let him take the lead and ultimately win. Maybe these other Kenyans weren't involved. You can't beat a Kenyan.
Not two Kenyans and an Ethiopian.
Unless you're the guy that's faster than, what's the fastest man in the world?
Usain Bolt.
Usain Bolt, because he's taking some steroids. Do these Chinese races, they test for that stuff as well?
I don't know.
They're probably jacked up. Totally jacked up.
I do like, though, they cheat a lot, because I think they talked about that 2019, another half marathon, a guy... One, because they found out about midway through he was riding a bike.
Yeah, they got him on film. They say this only reflects deeper issues within this organization of sporting events in all of China. Well, of course they're going to try to cheat. And,
how boring is your half marathon, though? Halfway through, a guy can hop on a bike and go and just pedal his way through and nobody noticed.
Too.
And nobody noticed.
You got his little, bib on, pinned to his shirt. Plus, I went to watch my daughter run she ran a half marathon, did pretty well. But those things will go on forever. She finished in 2 hours, 11 minutes, and we went and greeted her at the finish line, managed our way through the crowd, went and found the car, got in the car, drove to a breakfast restaurant, waited 20 minutes outside. The breakfast restaurant happened to be on the path for the last. We're sitting out, eating breakfast, and watching people still run by.
Do you tell her as they're running by, like, this toast is really good. You guys got to try this after you're done.
I mean, they just allowed them to go as long as they needed to. And, an hour later, they're still closing these things out. I've never thought of this, and I probably do not use my, I will say her name, the AI bot from, who you say her name?
Amazon.
Yeah. I tried something called Simon Says, where you have it answer a question that you've already given the answer to, as a joke, you say, I don't use it to turn stuff on or off. It's just audio. It apparently has saved a life. The incident occurred in India by a man by the name of Pankaj Oja, briefly left his home in Uttar Pradesh to run an errand. A large monkey then made its way into his residence and started making a mess. The monkeys over there are a big problem.
Yeah, they just wander in your house wherever you leave the door open.
Why don't they're opposed to killing them or shooting them to control them?
It's not a good look.
Yeah.
Also, well, there's a lot of them.
Yeah. They're looking for food in his kitchen. His 13-year-old sister-in-law, Nikita, and 15-month-old daughter, Vamika, were playing in an adjacent bedroom when they heard and saw the primates approaching the room. Thanks to Nikita's quick thinking, she was able to scare the monkey by telling the smart speaker to bark like a dog. Then it jumped out of the window and ran.
They might as well be sending an Amazon rep down there right now to get that as a commercial, because how great. Monkey attack. Use Amazon.
No adults were around. She just said, look, I was scared. And I saw this thing above the refrigerator in the kitchen, and I gave it the command. Since everything was happening so quickly, I was not sure whether it would work. And thankfully it did. The other news is that Uttar Pradesh, India has pretty good internet.
Well, I mean, that's where all the, call centers are at, so they kind of need it.
Yeah, but it just seems like a a bit of a dichotomy to live in a place that, where you could be attacked by a bunch of monkeys at any moment, but you've got kick-ass internet connection.
Yeah. Again, that's where all the call centers are at, so they need good internet connection.
Well, good for her. And since they stopped doing Samuel L. Jackson, that expired. They don't do that anymore. That was the funnest I ever had with my smart speaker.
Can you imagine you still had the Sam Jackson? They used that? Get this mother effing monkey out of my house.
My mother effing house. it turns out that Queen Elizabeth, we discovered now by a woman who had served her for 17 years as her press secretary, that she was kind of like Bubba the Love Sponge. She loved when things went wrong. She liked when there was chaos. That as long as it didn't involve her, she was so comfortable in herself, and she loved it when things went wrong. If a cake was not cutting or a plaque didn't unveil at an event because it was so perfectly organized, she got a kick out of it. She was invited to bring her family to Balmoral and also to Sandringham at Christmas. She said, the Queen and I used to talk a lot. I miss her. She was very special. She nicknamed her Samantha Panther. She had a great work ethic, blah, blah, blah. She said, we did mock up and showed the Queen what YouTube was. Fantastic, she said.
I like to think of a Queen sitting around watching Mr. Beast on YouTube.
Fantastic. they say that she had her own YouTube page before the Pope did. She just liked to start crap or just involve being in the middle of it. I mean, you're so bored anyway.
Yeah, I mean, when you think you live that life that she lived where everything was taken care of, every little thing that you wanted, hand and foot, you were served. I think at some point you kind of would. I mean, that's the type of person where I think I'd be just like sitting at a table and just push a glass onto the ground just to see something happen.
Yeah. according to this person, this lady that worked for her, in 2018, she worked for as a private secretary. She was like farmed out to Harry and Meghan at the request of the Queen. However, she resigned shortly thereafter, less than a year after, quote, being treated harshly and likened the job to, quote, working with teenagers.
Man, how awful of a person do you have to be to get the Queen's former secretary to quit in a couple days?
Yeah. She wrote a book too afterwards. So, you know, at least you have that. You know, I mean, you might not get rich working in the White House or working in the palace doing whatever menial job, but when you're done, as long as you haven't signed an NDA.
I mean, I bet she probably made pretty good money in that position,
you think?
Too. Yeah.
Working for the Queen?
Working as the secretary. In the position she worked for the Queen, I bet she made pretty decent money.
Well,
to do it for 17 years, too.
Right. And you can see all that dirt backstage, you know, what's going on behind the scenes. I like it, though, that she got a kick out of stuff, though, when it went bad.
You wonder if she was there in the room when Queen called to have Diana killed, so.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, of course.
Oh, I'll get to this. I'll say that. This is the story you told me about today, about the Spanish politician resigning.
That's a
close the show out type of deal right there. A man has been arrested in North Carolina because the woman says he's been using her car to sexually pleasure himself for 3 years. He's a 52-year-old man. It's been going on for 3 years, and he's got mechanophilia. I guess he gets on the hood of the car and sexually gratifies himself on many occasions. The last one happened on Sunday. The woman said she tried to put cameras out to catch the evidence, but he would move them. She eventually put another camera out. Was caught what was going on. He's charged with a felony of stalking and damage to property. So he would
get up in there and just grind on it
on the windshield.
Yeah, on the hood and windshield. Yeah,
that's not good for the paint. Everybody knows that. All right, let's take a break. When we get back, our buddy Eric Matheny will join us. Stick around. It's the Shannon Burke Show. Eric Matheny will join us momentarily here. About 5 minutes or so. these protests blocking roads. I realize that protesting is uniquely American thing. And it's guaranteed in the Constitution. But what it doesn't guarantee is your right to be destructive. Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or the press or the right of people to peacefully assemble and petition the government for a redress of grievances. So it's right there in the First Amendment, peacefully. You can argue you're just standing in a road. You're peaceful.
Yeah, but not when you create disruptions like that.
No. What I fear is a coordinated thing like this that culminates in a road blockage and a terrorist attack at the same time.
Or yeah. It leads to the fury that we saw in a lot of the Summer of Love BLM riots. A lot of them were peaceful protests that were just blocking the road to protest until someone drove up in a truck that looked
blasted
like might have been they were looking at them a little funny, and you got people banging on in a car, and the guy panics and runs through a bunch of people, and then you've got burned down Burger Kings.
Right. Yeah, the average American, when his car is surrounded, his or her car is surrounded by a mob of angry protesters, I think is legitimately in fear of their life.
As they should be. Humans are weak, easily scared, but we get mob mentality, we start really becoming emboldened.
inevitably someone gets run over. You said that they tried to do this here in Tampa?
Yeah, I guess Davis Street in downtown Tampa, they had them removed in 15 minutes and traffic back open.
I know that people believe in this type of protest, but if you do, drop us a call or drop us a remark and tell me what you see. I mean, what is the end game? What's the final? What are you trying to achieve? If you're trying to achieve awareness of your anger, that's one thing. But, you know, pretty much people get that. But if you're trying to improve your position or you're definitely not going to change anyone's mind.
No.
Nobody's 4 hours late to work, stuck on a bridge somewhere. You know what? These guys might have a point.
And it goes every way. If it's you want to take the January 6th stuff as protest, that didn't change anybody's mind towards either other side. The BLM protest did not change anybody's mind either way on the other way.
No.
This is not helping their cause. In fact, it's a lot of people are starting to hate them. There's a lot more people going, you know what? We really should be free in Palestine because I'm thankful I didn't get to go, pick up my kids from school, or I missed my work, my job, and then, you know, I have a chance of getting fired now because, these kids sat in the middle of the street for free Palestine. Or the person that's in an ambulance that's now stuck there, that they got to airlift somebody out of there because of the fact that, you guys blocked the road off. So you feel good about yourself. It didn't accomplish anything. It doesn't make anything better.
It does harm.
It harms your cause.
It does harm. It harms the cause, but it does harm to everybody. You're causing amazing, inconveniences and maybe life-changing inconveniences by your little display. And they're not. Protests are not meant to be violent.
And again, you can easily... Constitution's
very, very specific on it.
Just stand on the side of the road and
hold your sign.
Yeah, hold your sign. You can
protest. You know why they don't do that? Because they can't force you to look at their sign.
You got to cross through Golden Gate Bridge. Yeah, you can force them on.
Is our buddy Eric on? No. On Mondays, we catch up with our buddy Eric Matheny. Catch him where you get your social media. He's a great follow on X. At Fix the Nation. Eric, how are you, brother? Oh.
Yeah, we're going to have to.
Hold on 1 second, Eric.
Call back.
Call us right back. Put that one on hold. What's going on over here? Apparently, these things unfolded early in a couple of cities, and now almost every American city, there's a major American city, there's been at least an attempt to shut down bridges, roadways, traffic, inconvenience people. And I wish there was a way I could figure out how to inconvenience them. You know what I mean? In a peaceful way, of course. and give them a taste of their own.
Well, you can, and they freaked out. You know, they wanted to sit inside the chancellor's office in Vanderbilt. Oh, you couldn't get your tampon changed out. No, that, now they're inconvenienced.
All right. Is he better there? Come on. Okay. Having a little bit of trouble. I don't know what the deal is. How long before there's a PLM, Palestinian Lives Matter?
I'm surprised we already don't have that.
I see an opportunity. Want to try again? What is the deal? All right. There we go. Eric Matheny, ladies and gentlemen. Get him where you get your social media, at Eric M. Matheny. Listen to the Bob and Eric Save America podcast. I don't know where to start today. How about you?
Well, I know that you were mentioning about the climate, or actually it's not the climate change people now. Now it's the Hamas people that are blocking the bridges and roadways nationwide.
Yep. A lot.
I saw a Chicago airport. I saw the Golden Gate Bridge. Yeah. I mean, one, obviously you're upsetting people and not bringing people to your side. But what upsets me the most about it is I see them doing it in other countries, and police are there. Police are there pulling them off the street. I don't know what it is with our law enforcement and our mayors. I suppose it's our mayors and governors, because they're not doing this in Florida. They're not doing it in Texas. They're doing it in California. They're doing it in Chicago. They're doing it in more liberal bastions. But I'll tell you, I don't understand that you're blocking a roadway. Why don't the police just come in? It's a crime. It's a crime to block a roadway. Why don't they come in and say, okay, leave, count to 10. And if you don't, they start arresting people, clear these roadways. I mean, the thing is, it's not just the inconvenience factor. You're running late for work, blocking airports. What if, like, a parent is on their deathbed and you have to be there now? I've been in that situation. Time is precious. And somebody holding up your flight and you missed, saying goodbye to a loved one because someone wanted to protest whatever. I don't care what the cause is. You don't do that.
Eric, I saw police on the Golden Gate Bridge. They've been there all day since this morning, literally in the, 30 or 40 police standing and literally just standing around in a group. I don't understand why there weren't handcuffs being put on and folks being arrested, but it seems they're unwilling, or their hands have been tied in the situation and can't do anything about it. Which do you suspect it is?
Well, I think it's that exactly. I think that their hands have been tied. I think the officers on the ground, I think they'd be delighted to take those people and charge them and move them on. But, they have bosses and they're getting, word down from the police chief who's taking orders from the mayor. And if ideologically the mayor is aligned with these people, and they say, hey, they're just protesting. It's peaceful. Is it really peaceful? I mean, when you're blocking people from getting where they need to be, I mean, you're infringing. You have a right to say what you want to say, and you have a right to protest. But when it infringes upon my freedom of movement, my freedom to go about my life, my obligations, places I have to be, people who have to be at work, have to pick up their kids. And imagine how stressful your day-to-day life is already. And imagine you're sitting there stuck in traffic for 8 hours. Because somebody wants to, protest climate change. Hamas. I don't care what the cause is.
Right. I don't either. Even if it's something that I'm into.
Even if it's a cause I support. Yeah, you don't do that to somebody. So I don't know. I imagine it's just, it's the general feeling of, defunding the police or kind of neutering police departments, taking the power away from them. But the truth is that these are people who have places to be. And it's horrible. And it will turn people against you. You might have a good argument to make, but that is not the way to do it. And our law enforcement agencies, unfortunately, the last few years have become so neutered that I don't anticipate they're going to do anything.
Shortly after the 2020, we caught wind of the Fed's program to recognize these potential extremists and things to look out for on social media, images of the Revolutionary War, mention of certain things, blah, blah, blah. They were really worried that these things were being organized on social media. Clearly, if this is a coast-to-coast, a pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel organized thing from, literally from one coast to another, why aren't the feds on it? Why didn't they know about it in advance? Are they interested now in looking for these people? Do they want to know who these people are? They're shutting down commerce in the United States in our biggest cities?
Well, interestingly enough, I mean, these are actually not pro-Biden protesters. These are actually very anti-Biden protesters. So since they take a very adamant and bold stance against the policy position of the current administration, you'd think that they would want to go after these people and prosecute them. But for whatever reason, they don't. I'm not sure I can tell you if it were, you know, MAGA protesters, you know, protesters wearing red hats. You would not only would you have people charged and probably charged federally as well, but you would have the news coming out, oh, my God, this is another insurrection. They're engaging in civil war. Look at this. Look what they're doing. But when it's pro-Hamas or pro-climate change, then it's silent. And it's infuriating. I haven't personally had to deal with it here in Florida, but I feel for those people. I can imagine trying. And you know what? Just because you live in another state, oh, I live in Florida, I live in Texas, it's not going to happen here. There's going to be a time when you may have to travel through one of these airports. And what if, you know, we know how bad the state of travel is. What if it's the flight crew that can't get there? They don't just have a backup crew. Oh, you'll catch your plane. No, your flight's going to be canceled.
Right.
So this affects everybody. And travel already is stressful enough. They need to do something about this. They need to remove these people. And you know, even though it may be a misdemeanor, you know, blocking a road. Look, you know, Rudy Giuliani had it the best. When he was mayor of New York, he said he can have the sidewalks. He can't have the street. Stand on the sidewalk. Stand, hold your signs, do whatever you want. Honk for Palestine. I don't care. But when you take to the street and you impede upon my freedoms, then we have a problem.
Yeah, I don't know why, you know, we've taken action here in Florida to on that type of thing. But, you know, it seems to be self-defeating. But who knows how long it'll last either. And let's change gears a little bit. It wasn't World War III that broke out Saturday, but Iran broadcast its attack, let everyone know that it was coming. Israel and our, its allies, including the United States and UK, did a tremendous job and knocked down 95-98% of everything that shot their way. And then Iran goes, oh, then this now concludes our attack. Thank you for allowing us to attack you. Why announce yourself in and out, and why launch that barrage of 331 missiles and drones, knowing the protection system of Iron Dome and David's Sling and all these other defense systems? Was this a serious attack?
I've been pondering that idea today because I'm thinking, like, you know, it really was ineffective. And I know, with, you know, it's our tendency to go, oh, my God, World War III, which I wouldn't take away. And I don't think we're being hyperbolic by saying that. I mean, it was an attack, and Israel's obviously going to do something. It's not going to end here. I think maybe they were just kind of, you know, like testing the waters to see, like, we are going to launch an attack. But obviously, if they wanted to do something, you know, far more serious, they would have. But sending the drones, I mean, they know the Iron Dome system's in effect. I don't think a single drone strike got through.
No, not one drone. Only seven ballistic missiles got through, from what I'm reading.
Yeah, that's what I saw as well.
What, do you think there'll be a retaliation, Eric? It seems that the IDF and Bibi Netanyahu don't see any other way about it. Would the tendency, obviously, is to retaliate, but couldn't they just sit back and go, okay, you win, we'll go on about our business and finish our duties in Gaza?
They're not going to do that. They are chomping at the bit for this as well. I mean, look, the bottom line is the cooler heads have to prevail. But, you know, Iran, you know, what they're doing, it doesn't have the same – I guess they're not motivated the same way that Israel. Israel's trying to survive. Israel wants a place to live. And Iran is trying to wipe them off the face of the earth. So where do you find common ground with that? It's like, look, you have a right to live. You have a right to live. Let's live here. Let's live here. Let's draw some boundaries. But one side doesn't think the other side has a right to exist at all. So that's the problem.
Right.
That's a big problem. So Israel's in an untenable position. I mean, they just want to exist. I'm not saying Israel's completely blameless. I'm not one of those guys who says Israel can do no wrong. No, they can do plenty wrong. And I think both sides need to take a step back and let cooler heads prevail. But my God, they can't do anything. I mean, they've been attacked and persecuted as long as they have. If they just sit by and go, oh, well, we're just going to take the drone strike, you're invited. That's weakness. You're inviting attack by numerous other groups. It's not just Iran. There are plenty of groups that want to get at Israel. So they have to do something. They're in a position that they can't sit back and do nothing.
Right. Do you think it's lost on voters, Eric, that Biden has unlocked some $10 billion plus in former frozen money of Iran with the assurances that, oh, none of this will be used for evil. We're going to ensure it's used for good. And then, you know, short time later, we get this nonsense.
Well, I was thinking about it. I was watching those, you know, the drones, and I'm like, God, did the Iranian money that we, you know, unfreezed, is that what's paying for that? And we've seen that, too. I mean, we've seen, you know, this isn't the only thing that's happened since that money was released. You know, how much of that money is going into attacking our allies, is going into putting our lives, our national security in danger. There was a reason why that money was frozen. And Biden has unfrozen. I think the same way he evacuated Afghanistan, leaving hundreds of billions of dollars in weaponry
right
there. There's a reason for that. And it's more than just those acts, giving them the money and giving them the weapons, either through, negligence, incompetence, or on purpose. It's him himself and his administration. And every time, a man in a dress pretending to be Captain Crunch, parades around on a dais or falls on a stage or falls on a staircase, we can sit here and joke about it, but the rest of the world's salivating. And they're going, finally, the great Satan America is weak right now. They've been waiting for this for a long time. The hatred that Iran has for Israel is no different today than it was when Donald Trump was in office. It's no different than it was 40, 50, 60, 80 years ago. The bottom line is that America is in a weak position right now. We're not respected in the world, and they know they can get away with doing this because we're not going to do anything.
Let's not forget Biden allowing Iran to export oil to China, which has also done a good job of at enriching himself. He just kind of looked over that, that little.
Exactly. Yeah.
And why do that? That's not strategically beneficial to anybody, especially not the United States of America, only to China and Iran, because China gets the oil, Iran gets the money. I mean, we've allowed that to happen. Well, he's done it too many times with Venezuela as well.
That was one of the things that happened when we left Afghanistan, because Afghanistan and China share nearly a 60-mile border. And who's going to get the rights to all those minerals? They're basically opening up a trade route between the Taliban and China. So, at the end of the day, we've done a lot of China's dirty work for them.
Yeah,
kind of cleared the path for them to gain more power.
Let's change gears. Trump's hush money trial is underway. Jury selection is happening there. When I read about this, we know all the monkey business they did with the statute of limitations and blah, blah, blah. And at the end of the day, is it illegal for a guy to pay a girl $130,000 and go, look, let's talk about this. Just sign these papers. Here's $130,000. Just go away.
It's an NDA. People sign them all the time. People leave an employer, they sign an NDA.
Right.
NFL, and how many NDAs go through the NFL with acts of domestic violence, pregnancies, this and that? People do it all the time. These are, as long as you have consenting adults who are entering into an agreement knowingly, voluntarily, without threat of force or coercion, it's binding. This happens all the time. Hey, you know what?
Right.
He's not necessarily saying it happens. So he's like, hey, I'm a public figure. You're not going to go forward with this information. Publications engage in NDAs all the time. I mean, people do that. This is the business of being in the public eye.
Right. I read.
So, but the thing is that
I read that there were 30 to 50 NDAs signed around the people that visited OJ in his final days, including the medical staff.
There are NDAs for just about every situation you could possibly imagine, this being one of them. And the fact remains is that what Alvin Bragg did, you want to talk real fast and loose legal wrangling, basically took a misdemeanor where the statute of limitations had expired, created a felony out of it, saying that he had fabricated these documents by covering up a crime, the crime being trying to interfere with a federal election. This has never been done before. This is a guy, mind you, that we see footage coming out of his city, his district, nearly daily. People getting punched in the face on the subway.
Yeah.
People getting shot. Trump would be in a better legal predicament had he pushed someone in front of a train. Honestly, he probably would have gotten a slap on the wrist. But here he engaged in the conduct that public figures engage in. Hey, something happened. And it's not illegal to have an affair. Mind you, we're not making moral judgments about the guy. Did the guy have an affair? And I don't know. It's none of my business. I don't care that. I'm not married to the guy. I'm voting for the guy for president. If we're going to use that as the criteria upon which to judge our presidents, we better reevaluate, because probably every single one of them has had an affair.
We're all reminded instantly of Clinton and literally perjured himself, and his defenders were, it's just a sex. He only lied about sex. It's just about sex. All this is, and when it comes to spending campaign funds, the way I understand it, as long as you're spending campaign funds in the furtherance of the candidate, then that's a lawful use of it. And what could be a better furtherance of a candidate than shutting up a porn star about having some affair that he may have not had?
Well, I'll tell you. And he was writing it off as legal expenses, which it was. He was paying Michael Cohen, his attorney, to execute legal process. Have this person sign an NDA. The bottom line is that yes, it's absolutely politically driven. There's nothing that Trump can do about it, even if he if he wins, because it's a state level prosecution. They are salivating. They're chomping at the bit. They want him off the campaign trail. The judge just told him he's got to be there every day.
Yeah.
He's going to miss his son's high school graduation.
Yep.
He's going to be there every day. He's in a very unfair, unpopular jurisdiction where the likelihood of him being convicted on at least one of the counts. Now, I thought some pretrial motions would have disposed of this, but obviously not. I don't know legally what what they've approached, because I think that they were trying to go after the ambiguity statute, or go after the fact that the underlying crime is not a crime, and how do you – the legal wrangling of it, the way that Bragg was trying to put it together, I didn't think it would get to this point. Clearly it is, and then the thing is, after this, he's got three more trials he's got to deal with. So it's going to be back to back to back to back, and that's part of the idea of it. But believe me, prosecutors have discretion. They can they have gone out of their way to make certain that they can prosecute him for this. This is not just we're following where the evidence goes.
Right.
They have created this out of thin air.
In your best estimation, Eric, what if convicted? What happens immediately? Can he appeal, post a bond, stay out of jail, continue to campaign? What happens?
I think he'll definitely appeal. You normally file the notice of appeal within 30 days. I don't think the judge takes him into custody if he's convicted. I do think they'll let him stay out on bond pending appeal. But I don't know. I mean, I'm just speculating. I mean, the judge could do something really bold. He's not a flight risk. He's not a danger to the community. He's not charged with a dangerous crime. There's no reason to do that. He's charged with the nonsensical process crimes. He's the most recognizable figure on the planet.
Right.
He's not a dangerous person.
He'd be traveling in a giant aircraft with his name on the side of it.
the guy couldn't flee if he wanted to. So I think leaving him out on his bond would be fine. But he's got other trials he's got to contend with.
Right. And if he is convicted and remains out on whatever a bond or whatever, and continues, does this embolden him further, or does this start to chip away at his armor at this point?
Oh, it emboldens him further, and it gains him more support. People see this. People are wide awake to this. They see this. They see it's not just this. They see the blatant double standard, which I've stated before. Even if you're not necessarily a Trump fan, you have to understand that there are people getting away with a lot more, prosecutors turning a blind eye and then going after this guy for something as silly and as made up as this. People are wide awake to it.
Yeah. Eric Matheny, get him where you get your social media. Great follow on X at Eric M. Matheny. And of course, listen to his podcast, the Bob and Eric Save America podcast. Eric, good to talk to you, brother. Have a great week.
You too. Thank you very much.
See ya. Good stuff. Also, supposed to come up at this trial is the National Enquirer's catch and kill policy. But, I guess Stormy signed a deal with them or someone, one Trump accuser. And the guy at National Enquirer, buddies of Trump, says, I'll give you $150,000 for that story, but I own it. And then
there's
never goes
nothing
anywhere.
Wrong with that, as long as it's not a crime committed.
Right. I agree.
That works in TMZ all the time. What do you think they do? They spend all day long looking for people that run into a celebrity and say, "Oh yeah, we want the exclusive rights to that,"
so they can either
destroy it or be the only ones that talk about it. Or
right? Oh yeah. Have the exclusive on it. All right. When we return, your remarks await us. a stupid story about some Italian guy. We'll get to that. A delivery driver also in a stolen car accident. Well, in poor judgment, asks a cop for directions.
You got a phone, get Google Maps or something like that. You're in a stolen vehicle.
But was the person actually delivering a meal? Were they working for a delivery?
I believe so.
They had the list of drugs in that vehicle. Not to mention the car itself was not theirs. It's good stuff. Hang on. It's the Shannon Burke Show on the Florida Man Radio Network.
The
that's laughable. To say that Trump paying off Stormy was the election interference when suppressing the laptop has not been deemed election interference. We live in crazy land. I'm just hearing the cringe story about Eric's tragic finger injury this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
It makes time. Me, I mean, I'm quivering when you tell it. I'm chopping and slicing and working in the kitchen. I take great care. I got that little thing. It guards your thing. And I just, and I'm very, the mandolin, I don't even touch anymore. I see it in the drawer. I'm like, oh, no. Because I've taken off a tip of my finger on that. I don't want to have to get a one of those oyster shucker chainmail gloves in order to use it next time. Because that is just too fingertip injury.
I'm mad at myself because I don't ever cut my fingers with knives because I'm really protective about that. But I've got me and the wife have started doing meal kits because it's cheaper in the long run for the two of us. Yeah. I don't have to buy a bunch of groceries that may or may not use and go bad. True. So the ingredients all come. It's great. It actually works out pretty well for us. But they don't sell, like, you got to actually peel carrots, which is I haven't done in forever. And
I hate peeling anything.
I was like, okay. I had to find a peeler. I'm like, okay, do I even have a peeler in my house? And I'm digging through the back drawers and the back of the thing.
Old grandma's old peeler.
And grandma's old. It even had the Goodwill sticker on it where I must have bought it at a Goodwill just to have a peeler. It was like 75 cents at a Goodwill. But it was the old style 60s, no gar protection. Yeah. Sharp
as a scalpel.
Yeah. Well, I found that out because I was peeling the carrot into the trash can and I swiped and immediately was like, oh, that's bad. And I looked down and I had taken a diagonal chunk out from my index.
How long did it take you to look at it before you, after you did it? Because when I cut my finger, I just reach for, I hold it with my hand and then I grab a paper towel and wrap it up and I wait.
That's exactly. I dropped an F-bomb immediately and I was lucky enough I was in the kitchen and grabbed a paper towel and slapped it on there. And it's like, okay, maybe it's not that bad. And you know, you're always trying to talk yourself down. Okay,
yeah.
I know I just probably chopped a good tip of my finger off. Maybe it's not that bad. And then I look down, and that paper towel is now crimson.
Oh.
I'm like, yeah, it's that bad.
They bleed like a the fingertip.
And of course, I'm like, okay, for some reason, I don't know what it is about my fingertips. I've cut my arms really badly. I've cut the back of my heel to the point where I almost have severed my Achilles. Bad stuff, and it doesn't bother me. Tips my fingers, I bleed. I don't know what it is. I go woozy. And I see that. I'm like, okay, the crimson paper towel.
Not a good sign.
And I get to a chair and I sit down. And then a few seconds later, okay, I'm like, all right, I'm awake. And I get to, I'm like, all right, I need to get a Band-Aid on this.
You're also so mad.
Yeah.
So your adrenaline's pumping. Like, yeah. Because you know it's going to be a long healing wound. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it never goes quickly.
So, okay, I get a Band-Aid. I know where I find them. I only got these big-ass pad Band-Aids that are just massive, way too big for a finger anyway. But okay, I'm like, all right, let's do this. Over the sink, I still have all the ingredients for my dinner that just happened to be on a cutting board next to it. I pulled the paper towel off, and apparently it sealed to my finger, so I pulled the paper towel off. It tears. Like, I can feel it.
Oh, the chunk?
Yeah, well, it teared from where it was sealed to my finger.
Oh, yeah.
Blood goes everywhere across all my ingredients of my dinner.
Prep is done.
Prep's done it's now. Over. I like, oh, okay. And I take this pad Band-Aid and I slap it on there and I twist it just to kind of seal. The problem is like now I have a Bugles witch finger on the tip of my, like a scratch.
You'd have the fingertip Band-Aid, the special
finger. No,
yeah.
It's probably one that you would put on like a leg wound or something like that.
Right, right. I have a lot of Band-Aids. I even travel with Band-Aids and Neosporin, by the way, in my briefcase because I'm prone to cutting myself. So, but yeah, God bless my wife. I have the most extensive kit of Band-Aids, a giant box in every different one. But, yeah, the fingertip Band-Aid is...
Yeah, it's the one thing I didn't have. And, you know, with all my issues with my wife, I have all the other ones, but they're for more, like, open wounds. And
right.
So, yeah, at that point, I've now ruined my dinner. I've chopped off my fingertip. I've got a witch finger thing. And I was like, all right, I'm going to bed. Like 8 o'clock, I'm in bed.
No dinner for
mad,
you.
No dinner. Again, I get up the next morning.
Then you got to take a shower.
Yeah, well, I get up the next morning, and I'm like, okay, we're going to go to Gainesville for the orange and blue game, but it's going to be hot outside. I need to get this changed into an actual dressing.
Yeah.
So I get all the pad. I get the absorbent pad. I get all the gauze and everything. I get all that out, prepped out. I'm like, all right, my wife, I'm like, hey, I need you to get this off and clean this off.
Yeah, it's tough to do on your
own. Neosporin. And as she's doing it, she takes a look down at my finger and goes, white as a ghost. I'm like, okay, I can't really good be looking because I'm already...
How bad is this thing? Like,
it's not that bad. I mean, I took a good... What the problem is mainly is I took maybe... less than a quarter inch off the tip of my finger. I mean, you can see how flat it is across my fingertip there.
Yeah,
but it also, it took the fingernail with it. I mean, it
shaved it right off.
Shaved about a good half of my fingernail with it.
What? Just out of curiosity, what was the meal you were preparing?
It was bugoli meatballs with ginger rice.
Oh, and, hell yeah.
It was going to be delicious. I'm very upset with myself.
A little chill chewy down here.
A little crunchy with that fingernail in it. But she now Ooh. I'm she goes and sits in the chair like, I need a wipe, about to pass out. I'm like, all right, now I'm doing the triage right. of myself, and they're trying to get this done because I'm mad still. Now I have she's picking up finger bandages tonight. I've got like six. We either had giant pad bandages or like the
bitty.
Thinnest slit bandage I've ever seen before. So I've got like four of them wrapped around my finger.
Oh, man. Oh, I hate cutting my fingers with my hands. Terrible. Shall we get to these remarks?
Yes, let's do that.
From the Florida Man radio app, which you should have on your phone right now. Headquarters for archives and commercial-free podcasts. You can call the show, text the show from there. Also, hit the little microphone at the bottom. You get 30 seconds to share your feelings with us. There we go.
Hey, guys. AJ Walton County. There was a step teacher that I would so wish to get a hold of today. She just blew my mind.
A step teacher? But he means a substitute, right?
I think so, yeah. I don't know. It's like that sounds like a weird, like a porn subgenre.
Yeah. And my stepsister and my step teacher. Right there.
This is a small town. We got stepsister, step teacher.
I'm late to the party. What's a coochie sword?
I might have said it wrong. I'm pretty sure it's kookie.
Kukuri.
Kukuri? Yeah, not coochie.
The old coochie sword is a little different.
My bad.
Hey, Shannon. Sounds like to me that chiropractor really did kill it during sex. Hey-o! Beat him, beat him.
Poor Elvis impersonator.
Yeah.
Uncle Ted here. Well, Shannon, I'm still showing OJ the ropes down here. I got him into the club. You know, they didn't care that he was a murderer. Just long as he wasn't, you know, of the Hebrew persuasion. OJ, lay up on that shot. You'll never make that shot. Oh, he went for that one. Red fell in the water. Now you're stealing my act. I knew he was a slicer. Come on, we got to meet F. Lee Bailey, Red, at the 19th hole.
Easy, I love you, and this is not a knock, but I thought it was funny the fact that you only knew about the oldest conjoined twins because South Park made fun of them.
It's always blown me away ever since I had a copy of the Guinness Book of World Records and I saw Chang and Ang Bunker in there. And I realized that one fathered 8 kids and one fathered 9 kids.
Yeah, and they lived forever and with their wives, and they would just put a little sheet in between themselves when they were going at it. And that South Park episode is a classic one. That's the true freak union one. That's when Maury started getting rid of, he didn't want to pay freaks anymore. So all the freaks got unionized.
Oh.
Butters had balls on his chin. It's a classic episode. Come on.
Man, you guys sound like you were born yesterday. Protests are meant to be disruptive. That's the whole point. We have a long history of it.
Yeah, but I think when you get into that last time, there was an organ on its way to be transplanted. So they're responsible for that. If someone is a life or death situation, you know, that's a little more than disruption. Someone lost their job because they didn't come to work. You know.
Again, it doesn't bring anybody to your cause.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. I don't know. You know.
I mean, why not?
Maybe Larry could explain why he endorses such protests when he knows that it only turns more people against the cause.
And why not? You're doing these protests right now that's like 10 people on a bridge blocking it off. If you're going to really have a cause that you believe people are behind, why aren't you doing a Million Man March where you're getting a bunch of people together? Why disrupt small areas and cause chaos instead of getting large groups together to people to protest? Those are the type of things that people
get
actually
get a permit to get on to be on the DC on the mall there and march like you know like the Meow Meow Hat girls.
I miss the good old days when we used to grab these protesters and throw them inside the paddy wagons. Oh, the memories.
I know a girl who that's her thing. She's ready to protest. She wants to protest. She's on some email threads where, you know, hey, we're gonna protest downtown for this and that. All right, count me in. I'm there. And she ends up in a paddy wagon in handcuffs, and that's
I mean, you can believe in every cause that you're protesting for, but you're not bringing groups the way that they're doing it. That right there, where you're blocking off a bridge for 8 hours, is not getting it done. Now, if you had a protest where you got 5,000 people to walk across the bridge, that and you completed your protest where they all got across the bridge, you went, okay, there's 5,000 people there that were there to get that going.
And you have a place to speak, so people know exactly what you're protesting. You know, you had to have speakers, you know, just blocking a... I guarantee you, if this was MAGA for Trump blocking off a bridge somewhere, liberal area would say, call in the National Guard and shoot them all right there.
Protest anything, anywhere you want, but in the middle of the street, middle of the road, middle of the highway. Stuff gets ran over. Ask your local squirrel.
Yeah.
Yeah, about these protests, especially in Florida, you need to go down to your city hall and just pull a permit. Just like anything else, the city needs their cut, and they will let you go down there and bitch and complain as long as you want.
Right. I'm sure these guys didn't have you can't get a permit to block a bridge. Just be lawful about it, you know? I'm cool with it as long as you're lawful.
Hey, guys. Talking about the protests and blocking traffic and stuff, well... One time here in Florida, I parked my boy's car out on the road and then I ended up calling the police because the traffic was speeding by the house so much. And I said, well, I put my car out there to slow him down. He's like, don't tell me that. He says, you're obstructing traffic and I can write you a ticket for that. So, yeah, obstruction it's called.
Yeah, you can get a ticket for that. I doubt anybody in San Francisco did.
No.
Yeah, when I was a kid in high school, I worked for Fridays, and they had one of these contraptions that you cut tomatoes in, man. You put like 5 tomatoes on there at once, and had a bandage on every finger on both hands, and beat-a-beat-a.
My local sandwich shop does it all on the big slicer. They stack them up, everything on that thing. I need one of those.
I had never bought a meat slicer before?
No, I mean for a restaurant. I don't have one at home.
But pretty cheap, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, $100. You can get a decent one.
Really? I don't have the counter space. You see my house. Here we go.
Yeah, and these are paid protesters, man. You can guarantee that. This isn't organic. It's just organized chaos they're trying to bring about. I would wager the majority of them aren't real. They're just paid.
I mean, if you got something out there that is a worthy cause. I'm trying to think what would draw me out. I'll say they were trying to go, oh, we're thinking about scrapping the whole Constitution. I would go out and I'd protest my ass off about it. But I wouldn't stand in the middle of the street. I don't know. Do you think a certain amount of these are paid?
Yeah, most of them are. For this type of organization, you have to have people that are being paid to do these type of things. That's their entire job is to go out there.
And it's strategic, too. O'Hare Airport, Golden Gate Bridge, you know, Brooklyn Bridge.
I mean, they're probably not working because it's a little difficult to be like, hey, boss, I'm not coming into Chipotle today because I'm doing a protest on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Got better money to block the Golden Gate Bridge today. Here we are, I believe.
When Kate said coochie sword, I laughed so hard I just couldn't go there. Haven't been masturbating ever since.
I don't know what possessed Jonathan to buy a sword. Self-defense?
Well, so he can go on a video and go, whoa, yeah.
I used to stay at my brother's house. When I went to town, I stayed in one of his kids' old rooms. They were off to college or out of college or whatever. And they had those katana swords on the display, you know, like 3 on the top of the dresser.
So
like,
they had Mall Ninja swords, though.
Yeah, so I said, let me check this out. I pull one down, and I go to move it, holding the handle, it's like all loose. Ting, ting, ting. It's moving around the hand. It's dull as it could possibly be. And I swung it once, and it flew out of the handle and stuck in the sheetrock. I'm like, I don't know. This is not a good idea.
10 people. A new liberal area was going to chime in on that crap.
I wish OJ was still here. We could let them meet up and see what happens.
All right. What is that? That's weird.
Yeah, when I was getting my criminal justice degree, I asked the deputy sheriff, hey, if these guys block my truck, can I just run them over? And he's like, well, yeah, considering you're a veteran, we'll just claim PTSD and I'm not going to arrest you. So there's your answer.
That's what it's going to have to take, I think. You know? It's happened before. People have, you know, there are certain cases where you see them kind of edge their way slowly. Because at the end of the day, these guys do not want to die underneath one of your tires.
No, they don't really believe in that cause that much.
No, and they will lay there as long as possible and play the chicken game. You just got to play it with them because I guarantee you eventually they're not going to sit there and let you roll over their foot or their leg or their knee.
O.J. Simpson was disgustingly cavalier, and what I mean by that is he stuffed it in your face every turn, and you knew that he committed those murders. He wanted you to. It was like he was laughing. So disgusting. What a horrible person.
Is she saying that he wanted you to think that he was guilty and got away with it?
Yeah, I think he thought it was a joke.
I remember an interview post him being found not guilty or acquitted, whatever it was. He's on what's the famous beach in California? Venice. And it's on the boardwalk, and he's walking with somebody, CBS, whatever. They got a cameraman walking backwards. And she's like, you know, they're talking about what it's been like and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, his eyes light up. It's some beautiful blonde lady in like little tiny little shorts walks up to him. He lights up and she goes, OJ, oh my God. He goes, hey, how you doing? She goes, I've always wanted to shake the hand of a murderer. And then she keeps on walking. And the interview's like, well, you get that a lot of that. He goes, well, you know, he kind of laughs it off.
Yeah. Again, nobody that murders somebody writes a book about how they would have murdered somebody if they wanted to murder somebody.
Yeah, I would have. So
there's no, Casey Anthony's never written a book about how she would have murdered her child if she had a chance to.
What was his goal there? To tell people, look, that's the how I would have done it. Here's how I would have done it.
I would have been much more professional. You would have never caught me.
Every, you know how, every, you know California is doomed. Every. And then a group of people on that bridge sitting there that long didn't band together, get their own protest going. And they walk down there and tell the cops, well, we've got about 100 people here. We outnumber you. Get out of the way because we're going to beat the crap out of those people. But no one's got any stones out there.
I mean, there's enough cars on that thing. If you got enough able-bodied people in that traffic jam, you could probably, by force, overtake these people, incapacitate them, and leave them on the side of the road and get traffic moving again.
Probably could put a meat slicer on the counter, but you'd likely have to relocate two rice cookers.
We have four, I think, and a rice dispenser.
Oh yeah, it might be time to.
They're not all, you know, countertop. We only have eight rice cookers all on the countertop going at the same time. Oh, I'll tell you what, I did a flap steak from Morganic Meats.
Nice, how'd that come out?
Oh my God, dude, it was like you had to be a buffoon to mess it up. And it was I didn't know they had to fold it in half. I get it home. I'm like, oh, crap. And it's like, you know, it's like a fairly fit on the grill on the egg. So, but I marinated with just fajitas, and it was just absolutely kick ass.
You know. Oh, Shane's on the other guy. One hung low. Just want to say hello. Love you guys. Okay, got to go. Got to go. Winn-Dixie, get some Chinese noodles. Okay.
Hey, Shannon, I understand you don't have a meat slicer. Didn't you buy a hamburger press at one time?
I did, but it wasn't for me. It was meant to be a gift, but it never showed up.
Yeah, it was one of those train cars that got robbed out in California.
Yep. I attended I was a judge this weekend for a food truck battle of the food trucks. And so I get there, and it's me and a city official and some influencers or whatever, and then it's a couple of radio people that were really cool, and I'm sitting right next to the city commissioner, who's the vice mayor or maybe the night mayor, I don't know, assistant,
And said the nightmare.
The assistant nightmare, yeah. And she's as nice as she could be. But the whole time, I felt like the fix was in. And she's like, she'd lean over. I didn't like this. This was dry right there. So I'm going to, what are you going to give it? I'm like, isn't this supposed to be?
Yeah, you're like, stop looking at my, stop cheating on me here.
I like stuff you might not like. And even the guy that was running the thing was like, hey, what you, let's talk about the number one and two in the entrees. You think this guy and that guy, right? Because that's what I'm thinking. And I said, I feel like I'm trying, you guys are trying to influence my decision. But let me tell you this. I had no idea what to expect. I knew I was going to be eating a lot of food, so I didn't eat breakfast. So this very nice lady leans over and goes, listen, I do this every year. The key is don't hardly eat any of it. I said, oh, I didn't eat my breakfast. She goes, oh, no. It goes way beyond that. And so the food starts showing up, and the first thing is the smash burger, which is the best smash burger I've ever put in my mouth. Apparently, they've won too many times. And so we cut it in half, and I'm sharing with this lady. She cuts it into fourths, only eats one bite of the fourth, puts it back on the plate, shoves it away. I look over, and I'm putting the last shred of the half of that burger in my mouth, going, oh, my God. And then the food starts showing up like crazy. It's like a lobster roll, and then when you want to eat all of it, pork belly, and you keep, have to remind yourself, I can't eat all of this, even though you want to. I tasted 40 freaking things.
Do they let you, like, I would have, like, a stack of Tupperware, like, 10 deep.
Take it home. Sliding, Kim came, and so I was like, Hannah, here, have this, honey, have this. And some stuff came across, and I'm like, I'm not even going to look at it. I'll give it a three or whatever. But it was a good time. Boy, oh boy. And then I went home, and I had plans to cook that fajitas and people coming over. Whew. A lot of digestive action.
Hey, Shannon. Hey, I met OJ at a bar here in Central Georgia about 15 years ago. I offered to buy him a drink, a Bloody Mary.
Come on. I don't think that's true. I have my brother-in-law sent a picture of him. He was in the, he was a lieutenant, and he was overseas, and I guess OJ was part of a USO thing, so he has a picture of him shaking OJ's
pre-murder OJ?
Yeah, pre-murder
OJ. When you can still shake OJ's hand and everything, that's cool.
Hey, what kind of marinade did you say you put on that steak?
I'm not going to tell you.
They ask for your secrets.
Some kind of mojo that I enhanced with liquid smoke. Anyway, it was delicious. All right. We'll take our final break here. Thanks for those remarks. They're powered by Morris Family Farms and Morganic Meats exclusively from the Florida Man Radio app. We'll come back to wrap it all up for you. It's the Shannon Burke Show. Well, sadly, a politician in Spain has had to resign. Daniel Gomez del Barrio, he was a municipal councilor, and he was resigned because some photos leaked of him, they're compromising. In some of the photos, he's on the floor, naked, eating his own feces.
No.
He also offered himself for sexual use and described himself as wanting to be, quote, exposed, humiliated, and degraded. He also described his desire to eat, seize, be a whore, and be used as a urinal. He also offered to eat other people's feces.
I don't think he was hugged enough as a child.
Well, I'm getting to is... This is in the privacy of his own home. What is he an effective counsel? Effective politician?
Yeah, maybe. But once the pictures of you eating feces get out, I don't think you ever can be an effective politician again.
In the leaked photos, Daniel Gomez del Barrio appears to be naked on the floor, eating his feces. Shockingly, in the French news source FDS, they claim the politician offered himself for sexual use and wanted to be exposed, humiliated, and degraded.
I mean, you always lose arguments from here on out.
Even if his work is good and effective he's popular with the people.
Yeah, you're a great city council guy, but the first time I come in there with a problem with city council, I'm like, you ate poop. And we have pictures of you eating poop.
So City Council announces, Daniel Gomez del Barrio says, we have balanced the budget. We have excess. We can do everything we want to for the community and the community centers and everything else. And thank you to everyone. And then you stand up and go, yeah.
I saw you eat poop.
You ate your own dew.
Yeah, you're done, Doug.
It's the weird fascination between eating poo, your own, maybe others if they want, and also want a desire to be a urinal, a human urinal.
Yeah, he just likes being humiliated.
In other news, he's been transferred to the local sewer department in his local municipality. Hail!
Oh, yay.
These extreme kink deals, the thing that always blows me away is they've got to get a picture of themselves doing it.
Yeah. Can you not just eat your own poop in private? Why do you got to get it on camera?
Not selfie time when you're eating your own poop. Woo. All right. That's it for us today. Thank you for tuning in and leaving your remarks and participating. Thank you, EZ.
Thank you.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
We will return tomorrow at 2 Eastern, 1 Central. We follow Don Miller, a fast rising radio talent in this market, hysterically funny. With certain privileges. He follows Bubba the Love Sponge, not only a national treasure, but a known violent threat to people in three counties. We'll see you tomorrow on the Florida Man Radio Network. My name is Shannon Burke. Have a good night.